the advice offered in this hour is for guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal opinion. It's a double consumer hour next weekend, so I'll be here on Saturday and Sunday from 9 p.m. on both occasions. But in the meantime, if you've missed any of tonight's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1, it's James Max, but next here on LBC, it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. Coming up, the King's state visit will go ahead despite security concerns, but does Charles have the power to repair the special relationship, if indeed there is such a thing? Should we be pandering to Trump, given his latest outbursts towards us? Plus, the former head of NATO has called on the UK and France to ditch the US and to form a new European coalition of the willing. Do you agree? But first, we're turning to Washington, where the president and his team were targets of an attempted shooting last night. It follows the killings of two British MPs over the past decade and the death of the political activist Charlie Kirk last year. So what do you think is fueling violence in politics? Call me now, 0345 6060973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Buckingham Palace says discussions have taken place on both sides of the Atlantic about the King's state visit to the US, and it will go ahead tomorrow. There had been fears it may be postponed following the failed gun attack during an event President Trump was attending in Washington, D.C. LBC's correspondent in the US Capitol, Simon Marks, says documents thought to belong to the gunman have reportedly been found.
There's growing evidence he was certainly motivated by an animus towards the Trump administration, by a plan to try and kill as many Trump administration officials as possible, although rather curiously, apparently, according to the Daily Beast, in one writing, he suggested that he was going to spare the life of FBI Director Kash Patel.
The Prime Minister says the people behind an explosion outside a police station in Northern Ireland will be brought to justice. Homes had to be evacuated after a car detonated near the barracks at Dunmurry outside Belfast. Political leaders at Stormont have been united in their condemnation. A woman arrested by police investigating a fatal house fire in Wolverhampton has been released on bail. Two young boys died after it broke out on Mason Street on Friday evening. Ceremonies have been held in Ukraine to mark 40 years since the Chernobyl disaster. The worst ever nuclear accident sent a radioactive cloud across Europe following a meltdown at the nuclear power station in the former Soviet Union in 1986. Dr. Sergei Belyakov worked on the cleanup. He's been telling LBC his health was affected.
Before going to Chernobyl, I was an athlete. I played professional basketball, so I was very strong. Once I came back, it took me about a year and a half to get back to court again, and I was unable. The first few weeks were a complete disaster. I wasn't able to walk 100 meters without catching a breath and sitting down.
And history's been made at the London Marathon after the fall of a world record. The Kenyan runner Sebastian Sarwe finished the first ever competitive event in under 2 hours. Ethiopia's Tigist Arsefa improved her own women's best time. She finished the course in 2 hours, 15 minutes and 41 seconds. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the UK. Chilly in the countryside with a low of around 4 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. Cole Thomas Allen is his name. He is the man who exchanged gunfire with Secret Service agents at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He had a shotgun and a handgun and a manifesto. Let's talk about this with Julia Manchester, who was there. She is the White House correspondent for The Hill and joins us on the line now. Hello, Julia.
Hello, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time. So talk us through what happened where you were.
Right. So I was towards the back of the room facing the stage, but still pretty far back. And, you know, if you look at where the shooting took place near a security checkpoint that was up a set of stairs and maybe further down the hall from where the ballroom was. So it was the first, we had just been served our first course for dinner. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump and administration officials had just arrived and had been seated. And then, you know, suddenly I heard by my count, and I know there's varying recounts of this, four shots or what sounded like very loud banging noises. And we all dropped to the floor, a lot of us getting under tables as we waited for the all clear. But while that was happening, Secret Service agents were ushering and evacuating President Trump, Melania Trump, and Vice President J.D. Vance.
What was the security like to get into this event?
So I've been to this event about 4 years in a row now, and you know it's basically the same as it has been in past events, whether there's a president present or not. So you walk, I walked into the building, but before I walked into the building, I had to show my ticket to a group of people checking ticket, checking you know who was coming in, and then I walked into the hotel. And then went further downstairs, down a number of escalators, to where the security checkpoint was. And before you hit that point, there's lots of pre-parties going on. Many of the pre-parties were administration officials were present. So I went through the security checkpoint, which was just, with a magnometer, and you just go through and, you know, an agent checks your bag and then you're good. Then you're, you know, can go into the ballroom without anything else. But the big question is, reportedly, Cole Thomas Allen had rented out a hotel room. Remember, this is at the Washington Hilton. It's a hotel. So theoretically, he didn't have to show his ticket or anything to anyone. He could have just gone right up to the security checkpoint. That's what he did.
Yeah, and he just sort of ran through. Apparently, he said the security at the event is all outside because apparently no one thought about what happens if someone checks in the day before. He said the security was so lacking that, quotes, if I was an Iranian agent instead of an American citizen, I could have bought my damn Mardus in here and no one would have noticed bleep. And a Mardus is apparently a Browning 50 caliber machine gun, which... which is a massive instrument.
Right. I mean, look, it's the fact that he rented out a hotel room does raise the question, were they thinking about this? And remember, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and this might be confusing to listeners who, you know, don't follow along with this or aren't as familiar. This is not an official White House event. This is a private event. It's hosted by the White House Correspondents' Association. The president and administration officials are invited to attend. So, you know, this isn't like a White House event that the president or the White House might host. It's separate. So the Secret Service doesn't have maybe the same amount of control over the security as they would at an official administration event.
As they would if Donald Trump had his ballroom.
That's a good point. And now we're, that's the big question. And I think that's where we're seeing Republicans and President Trump increasingly calling for the ballroom today and using this event to say, this is why we need the ballroom. President Trump made that point during the White House press briefing last night when he addressed the press. You have a number of Republicans in Congress backing him up on this. The Justice Department has asked that a National Historic Preservation Trust dropped their lawsuit against the ballroom to block it from being built. So this is something that you, I think the administration and the president are increasingly, you know, zeroing in on. But, you know, as you alluded to, the ballroom is, it's a, would be a part of the White House and, you know, an official part of, you know, the West Wing. The White House Correspondents' Dinner is not an official White House event.
Yeah. It's ironic, really, that Trump skipped the previous Correspondents' Dinner presumably because he was fearful of the reception that he would get, because normally it's where presidents are roasted, isn't it?
That's correct. And we know that the last time President Trump went, it was, I believe it was in 2015 or 2016. He was running for president. He'd been a number of times before. But, you know, a lot of it has to do, I think, with the relationship between President Trump and members of the media and his perception of that relationship. This is the first time he has gone as a sitting president. So it was a big deal. And that was a big get, I think, for the White House Correspondents Association, who really had extended an olive branch to President Trump. But, you know, what was interesting is last night in the briefing room, President Trump struck a very unusually unifying tone, calling on Americans to set their differences aside, and pointed to this event in particular as an example of it. He said, look, before the shooting happened, you know, this was a room filled with administration officials, journalists, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, etc. And it was, he said, a beautiful thing to see. So we'll see how long that tone and rhetoric lasts, but it was striking to hear that from President Trump.
And that was before the shooting.
No, this was after the shooting.
After the shooting.
Yes, right. He was describing the scene before the shooting.
Now, this person, this Cole Thomas Allen, he had a manifesto, didn't he? A reason he had written down why he was going to launch this attack. What do we know about that?
So we know that a family member of his contacted local police in Connecticut, saying that Cole Thomas Allen had sent them this manifesto, family members shortly after after he carried out the attack, or just before he carried out the attack. And the manifesto apparently had a target list of administration officials, and included, you know, according to sources, anti-Trump rhetoric and anti-Christian rhetoric. So that's what we know so far. We know that he's going to be arraigned in court tomorrow, at least on two charges, but it could be more. But that's, I think, you know, the next step in all of this, what happens to Allen.
Yeah, apparently he had a list of potential targets, and he specifically excluded the head of the FBI, Kash Patel. Do we know why he did that?
You know, I don't know why, you know, if that's come out. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but Kash Patel was at the dinner last night and was evacuated with everyone else. So I imagine it's something the FBI is looking into, but I'm not aware of, you know, the reasoning behind that.
This is the third attack against Trump, isn't it? Is this a normal tally for a normal president, or is this unusual like he is?
No, this is extremely unusual. And I think it speaks not, you know, basically to where we are in the country right now and how divisive things are. And it's not only the third attack against President Trump, it's the third incident of political violence we've seen, you know, on both sides of the aisle, or committed against people on both sides of the aisle. There was, of course, the January 6th attack on the Capitol in 2021. Just, you know, less than a year ago, conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot at a Turning Point USA event in Utah. Ironically, his wife, Erica Kirk, was present at this event last night. She was seen visibly shaken up, being evacuated. So this is, I think, the latest in a string of political violence we've seen very recently.
What do you think of the mass pardoning of all of the people that took part in that attack on the Capitol on January the 6th? Do you think that that has sort of sent the message out that it's this kind of behavior is actually okay? Go for it.
I think critics would say that, but I think, you know, honestly, it hasn't, I don't think, come up recently. President Trump and his allies obviously feel very strongly about it. It's something they've pushed for. But when it's come to attacks on conservatives, for example, like Charlie Kirk, they've been very outspoken against that kind of political violence.
Yes, but they've been very outspoken for the ability of anybody, regardless of even their mental state, to arm themselves to the teeth with guns.
Certainly on the conservative side of the aisle, there are people who are very pro Second Amendment. Not everyone, but there are. That's certainly, I shouldn't say pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights, I should say. And they say the Second Amendment is, kind of backs that up. So, yeah, there certainly is that argument.
And Trump has been particularly good to those people who sell guns for a living, hasn't he? I mean, pretty much from day one, he's been doing whatever they would have wished for, essentially.
The gun control lobby, yes. This is a conversation we have quite a bit in the United States after these mass shootings. There is the gun control lobby. It is very powerful. The National Rifle Association is very powerful. It's not just President Trump. I think there's a lot of conservatives and those on the political right that have a relationship with the gun lobby. And that's kind of where they look at these incidents as maybe not having as much to do with guns or firearms, but more of a mental health issue or, an other issue. So you have that debate that is constantly at play here in the U.S.
Yeah, curious that the very people that, the Republicans' response usually is to any mass shooting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a mass shooting in America more than once a day. Last year it was 407 mass shootings. That's absolutely incredible. But their response is always the same. Oh, it's too early to talk about gun control, thoughts and prayers. While at the same time, Donald Trump made it easier for veterans in mental health crises to get their hands on guns. There doesn't seem to be any low to which they will not go in order to prop up the profitability of the gun manufacturers.
I mean, that's always, certainly a debate. I mean, that we've seen over and over again in the United States. It's the power of the gun lobby. And I think after each of these mass shootings, we see, we see this debate happen. I don't think we're seeing this right now, the same debate happen over this with what happened last night. I think last night the debate over this is more about, I think you definitely do see the calls for gun control after this, but it's not the same. I think right now the debate is about security and about, kind of where it took place, etc.
Julia, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate that. Julia Manchester, the White House correspondent for The Hill. So what do you think is behind the what looks like an increase in political violence? In America, it's a bit hard to tell because of the background to violence. There's been 120 mass shootings in the United States so far this year. 125 people dead, 450 injured. Last year, the U.S. recorded 407 mass shootings. I mean, the proponents of gun rights, as they call it, would say that guns don't kill people. People kill people. But people can't kill people with guns if they don't have any. It's not just America, though, is it? Because there seems to be something in the air in this country as well. There seems to be a permanent state of anger and fury, unless I'm misinterpreting the signals. What do you think is behind this? 0345-6060-973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, Nick Abbott, LBC.
This is LBC.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolu.london. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So we don't have the same level of violence that they do in America. Guns aren't easily had in this country. And, I mean, there was knife crime, certainly, but it's a bit difficult to kill as large a number of people with a knife as it is with a gun, of course. And the American political system seems to be set up to funnel as much money as possible to the weapons manufacturers, regardless of the consequence of that action. It's absolutely extraordinary how many people get shot in America and how many people are shot all at the same time by one attacker, usually, or quite often, using military assault weapons, which you can buy freely in America. Last time I was there, the supermarket that would sell you frozen peas had a gun aisle, and I'm sure they still do. I'm sure it's more exciting and bristling with the weapons of death than it was when I saw it. What's really astonishing is that there's a mass shooting in a school at least once a week in America. But with that as the background, it's only something extraordinary that happens in America that actually makes the news. And of course, if somebody is attempting to attack the president, then that does rather draw our attention. But more broadly, there is a certain anger in the air on both sides of the pond, isn't there? It's not so kinetic in this country, but it's certainly in the air. And what do you think is behind that? 0345 6060 973. Epsom. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Nick. How you doing, mate?
Good, thanks.
So I don't know. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but you know, this whole thing that's taken place overnight, is it not just another publicity stunt? Like it was in Pennsylvania.
Well, I can understand why people on the internet would be saying that.
I mean, you know, you've obviously got the midterms coming up.
Yeah.
And I know that you and everyone else, you know, we all will agree that there is going to be, you know, a false flag event, surely.
Well, it's not outside the realms of possibility.
No, but I don't know. It just seems to be. It all seemed to be so staged.
Well, if this was staged, then it's a bit too far away from the midterms, assuming that they do actually have another election in America.
How far away was it when he had the ear gate, as I would call it.
Well, that was nowhere near the midterms, but it did put him over the line. It did draw sympathy for him.
This is where I think it all is again. You know, all of the shots outside. Not at all. It's all a ruse again. It's all another fake. Right. I'm 100% convinced of it.
Well, I don't spend much time on social media, but I would imagine that people on social media would say that if this was a fake, that it's less about the midterms and more about him getting a ballroom, because there had been a spanner thrown in the works about getting a ballroom, and now, of course, it looks as though, for the sake of his and future president's security, it would be a good idea to get that built as soon as possible. Interesting to talk to you, Chris. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Of course, the man did have a manifesto. I'll read you a bit of it. This is from the Mail, who are reporting this. I'm not a school kid blown up or a child starved or a teenage girl abused by the many criminals in this administration. Turning the other cheek when someone else is oppressed is not Christian behaviour. It is complicity in the oppressor's crimes. He wrote, allegedly referencing the president, "I am no longer willing to permit a paedophile, rapist and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes." So that appears to be the basis of the impetus for him to go and do what he tried to do, at least, and failed in doing it. And if really if the security of the president of the United States is dependent on whether somebody is or is not a guest at the hotel that the president is appearing at, that seems a bit lax, doesn't it? I mean, I completely understand why that seems to be an open goal for the conspiracy theorist. 0345 6060 973. Tarwin in Wales. Hello, Martin.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm not going to say thank you for taking my call, because that is a law, I know that.
Thank you for not saying thank you for taking my call.
I think I just did it. If this is not a reason for banning the gun laws in America, surely, if somebody can get within, let's say, 50 yards of the president, it's got to stop, hasn't it? I mean, you know, they shoot everywhere, don't they? It's got to stop. And King Charles is about to come. Is he going to be safe? I don't know. We don't know. Nobody knows.
Well, no, there's no such thing as safety. But if America was going to change its laws about the availability of guns to whoever wants one, and usually if you've got one, then like tattoos, you find yourself in possession of a lot of them, then yeah, they would have done it by now. I mean, I could spend the rest of this show listing off the mass shootings in schools, and I still wouldn't have enough time in 3 hours.
Exactly. I was going to say that, and yeah, that is absolutely shocking. But now America has got to understand that they've got to stop doing it. I don't believe there's a conspiracy theory. It was a lone person who happened to be staying in the hotel, who happened to get there with knives and guns, maybe a few weeks or days before the president came in.
Yeah, I don't know when he. I don't know when he checked in, but it wasn't by coincidence that he was there. I'm assuming that he went there because of the what he might have assumed would be the lack of security for a guest.
Totally agree. And the thing is, I think what worries me is our king is going there, and can we 100% trust? I don't think the king should go, if I'm really honest.
Do you not think it would be more of a diplomatic scene if he didn't go, rather than if he did and, you know, I don't think that his safety is in danger, but he might get the typical Trump insults thrown at him.
Massively great point. I think it's a balancing act, and I do think somewhere along the line, because you never know what Trump's going to ever come out with, that there'll be some kind of insult somewhere, and that's what, you know, I think that our king should not go.
Right. Well, dodging bullets.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll put it the same time.
Thank you for making your call, Martin. Yeah, dodging bullets is one thing, but dodging insults, well, I mean, you know, that's part and parcel of being the monarch, isn't it? You go out there and you smile and you put on your best face and do your best. But it is extraordinary what Trump has done since he came into the White House. He shut down the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention on day one. The White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention had been responsible for coordinating the federal government's response to gun crime and violence with guns, including mass shootings, and his first day in office he shut that down. He issued an executive order to gut critical gun crime and safety policies, clearly targeting the prior administration's progress on the issue. He repealed the zero-tolerance policy of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms with in regard to revoking the licenses of gun dealers who violated important federal laws, meaning that law-breaking gun dealers were unaccountable. He created a task force to enact the gun lobby's agenda, the Second Amendment Task Force, he signed in, aimed at advancing the gun lobby's guns everywhere agenda to put more guns in more hands in more places. You recall that Trump said that the answer to gun violence in school was to arm teachers. He sought to gut funding for life-saving programs for domestic violence prevention organizations and community-based violence intervention programs. These are all the things that he's done in his second term, pretty much from the moment that he got his knees under the Resolute desk. He settled in a case to essentially legalize machine guns. They reached a settlement in a case brought by the National Association for Gun Rights, challenging a ruling that banned forced reset triggers, which enable semi-automatic firearms to fire like fully automatic illegal machine guns. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act made America less safe for everyone. It made it cheaper and easier to buy some of the most dangerous and highly regulated weapons, including silencers. Why would anybody need a silencer who is on the right side of the law? They're short-barreled rifles, they allowed, and short-barreled shotguns, easily concealable firearms. The Trump administration slashed millions in funding for federal law enforcement, reassigning 80% of the firearms agents who normally investigate gun crimes to carry out this immigration crackdown. And he removed protections for at-risk veterans, veterans in mental health crises. He made it easier for them to get their hands on guns. So they're probably not surprised that is the result of all of those actions. So we know pretty much why there is violence in America, and it's so newsworthy is because it's so dramatic, because they have so much weaponry at their disposal. But do you think that there's an air of that in this country as well, particularly as far as politics is concerned? What used to be polite discussions are now people screaming at each other. Perhaps metaphorically speaking, on social media, but the anger is still there all the same. 0345 6060 973. More of your thoughts on this to come. Going to take a break for the news, after which, more violence, but this time of the canine sort. Dog attacks have surged in this country, so what is behind that rise? We'll come to that in just a moment. It's just past 10:30, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
Buckingham Palace says discussions have taken place on both sides of the Atlantic about the King's state visit to the US, and it will go ahead tomorrow. There had been fears it may be postponed following the failed gun attack during an event President Trump was attending in Washington, D.C. In the U.S. Capitol, a 31-year-old man remains under arrest after being apprehended near the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but questions have been raised about security measures at the event. And the Prime Minister is due to say he's calling time on shoplifting and will end what's being called a free-for-all. Sir Keir Starmer's expected to outline new measures tomorrow, which include the effective immunity for thieves taking goods worth less than £200. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the UK. Chilly in the countryside with a low of around 4 degrees.
LBC.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep on going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota Centre. Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer. The tea in G&T. But your delicate fragrance. Hints of lemon thyme. When the tea's this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
McDonald's cards are here. 24 cards to find and free food in every pack. Choose from a range of cards meals, including the legendary Double Big Mac. Order a cards meal and get a pack today.
18 plus UK only. With selected meals subject to availability. Ends 27th of April. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
So more of your thoughts on why you think there seems to be anger in the air politically, certainly in America, but I'd say that it exists in this country as well. And what do you think is behind that? Is it just our reaction to everyday lives, or are certain politicians actually whipping this stuff up? 0345-6060-973. So I'll come back to that in a minute, but let's talk about violence of another type. Dog attacks resulting in injuries across the UK have increased since 2020 by the no small figure of 80%. They've gone up by 80%, dog attacks resulting in injuries across the UK since 2020. Police recorded offences of out-of-control dog attacks causing injury have risen from 16,040 in 2020 to 29,400 last year. That's an 83% increase. Well, let's talk about this with Hannah Molloy. Hannah is a dog behaviourist and senior consultant for dog behaviour for the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Dog Welfare, and joins us on the line now. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Nick.
83% is a massive increase since 2020. Why has it gone up so much, do you think?
Gosh, it's crazy, isn't it? And I have to say, at this point, these statistics are particularly shocking, because before now, we've had mostly dog bite data from hospitals. So a lot of the previous statistics were looking at hospital admissions for dog bites, which are obviously very serious. But these statistics are even higher when we look at, you know, police incidents of dogs hurting people, and there can be a range of ways that they could be doing that. And I think the thing for me as a behaviourist is even this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I see so many clients whose dogs are biting them, and these never get reported to the police, and sometimes often they don't seek medical care because there's sort of like a shame shroud over your dog biting you. So I know that the statistics are even worse than we are seeing in the news, and it is super sad. But why is it happening? Oh my gosh, loads of reasons, and annoyingly they're not simple. I know the government wanted to just say, right, let's just blame this one breed, let's go on a witch hunt and blame this particular breed of dog for all of the danger, but that was a really dangerous thing for us to do, because I think there's so many more reasons why dogs bite people than they were just born into a thick-headed body, you know.
Yes, that's the one of the identifying marks of the banned breeds, and the law is very specific, isn't it? Pit bulls, tozers, XL bullies, and a few others. How hard is it to identify those particular dogs?
Such a good question. The first thing to say as well is all of those dogs are pretty much dog fighting dogs. So they're dogs who've been bred to fight other dogs. I wouldn't say necessarily that's true of the XL Bully, because they were slightly more of like a show breed. The XL Bully isn't even a breed, by the way. It's a type. So the breed is American Bulldog, and the XL is just a large American Bulldog. So they haven't banned a breed. They've banned a particular size of a breed of dog that hadn't even been recognised in the UK at the time when the ban came in. So yeah, recognising and identifying breeds is super hard for most professionals and for the police. It takes up an inordinately large amount of time, and we know, because the figures show and have shown us since the dangerous dog law came in 1991, looking at a dog is not a good indicator of its behaviour and what it's likely to do next. So yeah, it's just a frustrating waste of time. And there are now 50,000 dogs who are XL bullies that have been, you know, exempted and walking around on muzzles and lead only orders, that are not living their best lives just because of the body they were born into. And we need to do so much more than this to actually safeguard the public, in my opinion.
Right. So you're not coming at this from the point of safeguarding the animals. It's about the public.
Oh, gosh, it's both, isn't it? You know, I love dogs, but as a behaviourist, my job is to walk into people's homes and be the middle ground between what is best for those people and what is best for that dog. And sometimes we have to make difficult welfare decisions on everybody's behalf. Sometimes I've had clients who are like, no, I definitely want to keep this dog, even though it keeps biting me and all my family. And I have to say, ooh, is this a good idea? You know, I think it's probably safer for you to not have this dog in your life. And vice versa. Sometimes people are quick to get rid of a dog who I think with a little bit of training or might just not have had the time put in. And I think, oh, maybe we could try a little harder before we just decide to give up on this one. But nonetheless, no matter what the problem is, we're really not reading dogs well as the public. We're not learning about dogs. We don't understand a lot of their drivers. We're breeding dogs for profit. I mean, when I was younger, I bought my first dog, I think he was £120 when I was about 12. It was a while ago, a couple of decades ago. And now the prices of puppies are just absolutely crazy. So you can make a lot of money breeding dogs and people are doing that without really thinking about it. So there's so much that we can be doing to shore up breeding regulations, making sure that we're educating people about dogs, about how they communicate, about different breed drivers and what their needs are that need meeting day to day. And add to that, we're in a generation now that are addicted to smartphones, which is constantly on technology, aren't we? Our attention is really hard for even our kids to get, let alone our dogs. So it's definitely something that we need to be looking at because our dogs are crying out for attention with this kind of behaviour.
Yes, I mean, everything that you've described sounds bizarre to me. We're talking about people being trained to treat their dogs in a way that is best for them to prevent that dog from attacking and or killing them. If we were being introduced to dogs for the very first time, they'd be banned entirely, wouldn't they? If a drug attacked and injured 30,000 people a year, it would certainly be banned.
It does seem crazy, doesn't it? And you know what? I would say cats can often be more aggressive than most dogs. We just get used to it. We're like, that's fine. The cat can scratch me and you know, you think, well, a cat's not going to kill you.
A cat can't kill you.
I know,
exactly.
But you know what? We've lived with dogs for 20,000 years. So we are doing something wrong right now. You know, we haven't been being killed by dogs at this rate before. Mm. So we are the problem. You know, as much as I know, we can breed scary dogs. I've said it before. We definitely need some dangerous dogs legislation there because you can easily take two dogs who are people aggressive and breed them together and make an even more people aggressive dog. That is original Baylor Fox's experiment. They did that. We know that temperament is breedable. So I think we need much better laws around the dogs that are chosen to be bred together. And I also think we probably do need to seriously question whether or not we want dogs who are dog aggressive. Because for loads of these fights and bites and dangerous incidents, many of these dogs are attacking people because they're trying to protect their own dogs and the people get in the way. And this is, I think, a quiet issue that isn't really being addressed anywhere, is that, you know, do we want to live in a future where we have dogs that look at other dogs and go, I want to fight you and I want to bite your head off? I think ideally we can breed that out of dogs. That isn't something that we need to maintain, is dogs that are aggressive towards other dogs. So that's an interesting one. But aside from that, we also massively need data collection systems. I think a licensing system would be really handy to hold people to account and to have better traceability of where did this dog come from? Who bred it? Who trained it? Who's been looking after it ever since? And yeah, I think that kind of data system is really going to help us to kind of enforce a lot better as well when people are being irresponsible and maybe not managing their dogs so well in public.
But it's like a gun though, isn't it? I mean, some guns are traceable because they have numbers or whatever it is that are stamped into them. But criminals will take the stamp off. Criminals won't buy a gun from a registered outlet, and criminals won't buy a dog from a registered outlet either. Those are the people that are the problems. Criminals and, for want of a better word, stupid people. Stupid people get dogs that are a danger, and then they parade them around on a thin lead, thinking that they have them under control. But they absolutely don't.
No, it's pure arrogance and ego. It's really scary. And I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, dogs, we need a license to drive a car. I think you need a license to be able to handle a dog and understand that any dog can bite. Any dog can do serious injury. Any dog could kill somebody who's vulnerable or a baby, really, if they bit them in the wrong place. And yes, that's the thing to remember.
I mean, that doesn't mean that
every dog wants to, right? But every dog can, though. All dogs,
in effect, are dangerous. All of them.
Potentially, yeah, of course. They are, you know, all, yeah, yes, that's true. I mean, but not all dogs are born dangerous. They're not waking up in the morning being like, I'm going to hurt people. Dogs are amazing. Like, they can smell cancer. They help our blind people. Like, they find people in bomb sites. Like, dogs have literally been our servants and supports for 20,000 years. And recently, we have not been stewarding them well.
The thing that's happened recently, if we've been living with dogs for 20,000 years, yeah. Well, we used to live in caves, and we used to live in huts in the middle of nowhere. We did not used to live in tower blocks of flats.
No.
That's the problem, isn't it? It's dogs in urban areas.
Yeah, we really aren't giving dogs the environments they need to thrive. And again, I think a lot of this is about education and going, have I got the time? Have I got the capacity? This very incredibly, driven dog. So many people have got Malinois right now, and they're not pets really at all. And it's just because they're exciting and they see them on social media. And Malinois do wake up in the morning going, I want to bite stuff. Like, I was born to bite stuff. It's what gives me joy. They are Belgian police dogs, and that's what they want to do. And so we really do need to be mindful and thoughtful about the kinds of dogs we choose to introduce to our houses and our families, and take some more responsibility for when things do go so horribly, accidentally wrong. It's a huge issue, and it's a multifaceted issue. But it's not the dogs that are the problem. We are completely in charge of all of the aspects of their life, the dogs we choose to keep, the dogs we choose to breed, the places we keep them, how much we do or don't learn about them, how much we do or don't prepare. That is entirely on us, you know?
Yes, but you can't trust people, and you can't trust dogs. So wouldn't the best outcome be, instead of crossing our fingers and hoping for the best, to ban all dogs in urban areas? Why do we need a dog in an urban area? Why should the rest of us have to put up with the constant barking, the dog poop left all over, the fear of attack and death, just so that some people can feel better about themselves by having something that gives them unconditional love and attention, no matter how badly they treat it?
Yeah, I understand, Nick, and you're clearly not a dog owner, and that's fair. And you know what? And I get it. I don't think anyone should have to live in places with parks that are covered in dog poo. I don't think anyone should have to walk their kid through a park and be worried about that dog who's off lead and whether or not that person has done some good recall. I would really love to see a future where dog owners, and this is a wake up call for all dog owners, because if this does keep happening, that is the way that it'll go, is that we'll have to have more and more stringent restrictions put on dog owners. So we all need to shape up and decide to be better, and demonstrate better control over our dogs in public, not by using punitive methods and getting really shouty and yanky, but by understanding dogs, understanding their drivers, walking them in appropriate places, because that is a future that I would hate to see, honestly, Nick. Dogs lower your blood pressure. Like, there's so many studies to show that being around pets can really dramatically improve people's health and well-being. But I hear you.
Up until the point that dog attacks them. I mean, it does seem like just crossing our fingers and hoping for the best, ignoring all of the evidence that is piling up. 80% increase since 2020. 30,000 attacks last year. Mm. I mean, by your own admission, that is the tip of the iceberg, because these are ones that are reported to the police. It seems insane that we're putting up with this.
Why should the rest of us put up with that? Because we've had dogs with us for a really, really long time.
Yeah, but we don't live like we used to.
Well, I think some people still do. Some people have got a lot of space and a lot of time. I would hate to see dog ownership gentrified. I think that is awful. Everybody should have the right to, if they can afford to, and show and demonstrate that they can care for that animal well, access a dog. You know, I think some people have had really long arguments about this, and it's one of those things, like, not everybody has the capacity to own a horse, right? you can't keep a horse in your house. It's not going to work.
Or a lion.
But lions are different. different. They're not domesticated. Dogs are amazing domesticated species. And I hear you, Nick, and I think it's a really good warning and something that I'm going to take into Parliament and be like, listen, Nick is going to make this happen if we don't buck up, you know, ASAP, because, yeah, we can't go on like this. It's just crazy. Also, just as a last point, I will say, Nick, is that what we're looking at is the fallout of lockdown also, right? So most of my clients' dogs that are like 5 years old now are puppy farm puppies that have had serious, they were born to be broken. Like, if you don't put a puppy in an environment that is stimulating to it, that it can see things, respond well, bounce back from stress, you will teach that dog, like, it will go on in life to be barky and aggressive and reactive and nervous, and that is just that dog for the rest of your life. It will have learning difficulties, and that is what I'm seeing a lot of. So I do think that the data that we're looking at now is not representative of the rest of human history. We're in a weird time, and we will be for the next 5 years, because these dogs will, you know, mostly in the next 10 years, that'll be that generation. So what we need to do right now is breed better dogs and be really, really important. Like, look very carefully at conformation and health and behavior. Make sure that we're breeding for temperament, human sociability, dog sociability. I think those two need to be top, and physical conformation. So stop breeding dogs that can't breathe or don't have tails or have loads of skin folds that make them uncomfortable, or ridiculous coats that mat at the base. You know, we need to stop doing that. And then improve our general education about dogs. People just walk straight up to dogs and pat them in the face. Children will hug dogs and then video it and put it on social media and then go, what happens if I bark in my dog's face? All of these things need to stop to give dogs a fair chance to become part of our community again, you know?
Okay, good talking to you, Hannah. Thanks so much for that. That's Hannah Molloy, dog behaviourist and senior consultant for dog behaviour for the All Party Parliamentary Group for Dog Welfare. So two topics in this hour. Both of them have violence at their heart, and you can comment on either of them if you like. One is the political violence, and we're talking about that, of course, because of that shooting incident at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And if you have an opinion about dog behaviour and the behaviour of people that affects dogs to the point that they attack, then the number is the same. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Oh, Fiona's back at the monkey safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we're talking about two types of violence, one political and one canine. I'm not sure which is on Nick's mind in Vancouver. Let's find out. Hello, Nick.
Oh, hi, Nick. I can combine the both if you like. I think the reason that we've become so divisive in politics and prone to not trusting medicine or anything else for that matter is we've had 50, 60-odd years of relatively sort of not having to worry about anything in the West. You know, we vote in idiots, and yet we still make money, and we don't suffer the kind of plagues and famines that the Third World has suffered. Consequently, we're spoiled. We view politics as entertainment. That's all it is to us now. It's just sort of reality TV. We don't think we'll suffer the consequences of voting in a moron the way somebody in Thailand or Bangladesh will view these things. We're like, oh, we're English or we're American. It doesn't matter what we do. We're blessed. God will always smile down on us. We don't take vaccines. Well, there aren't people dying of plague in the streets, so clearly we can get away with it. We can buy XL bullies and get away with it. We think we can get away with everything in the West, and I fear that we're about to find out that we're not able to get away with everything, just turn into Russia.
Do you think that is a perceived lack of consequences to actions, or have we just become sort of inured to any sort of blowback to the stupid things that we do?
No, I think it's because, yeah, there are no consequences. We vote in idiots, and yet we can still borrow money and get away with it. And, you know, we sell off council houses and North Sea oil. And life in Britain is not great, but it's not the third world. It's not Zimbabwe or the Belgian or the Congo kind of thing. And so we kind of like I said, I think I've got friends in the States who are strong MAGA supporters. I play an online community that is, you know, mostly in the Midwest, and they're complete Trump supporters. They know he's corrupt. They know he doesn't care about him. They know that everything he says is a lie. They think he's a laugh. They voted for him, and they continue to support him because they think it's funny.
Right. Yeah, well, we had a bit of that here. I think Boris Johnson, some of his acolytes were... It appears as though they've joined a cult. I mean, it's almost less than funny. It's that they believe that he is, I don't know, been delivered to us by some higher power. I mean, that's certainly the way that it looks in America. Maybe not Boris Johnson. I think the people just were amused by him and felt as though they needed to mother him, which is, you know, that's part of his tousled hair and untucked shirt act. Brings out people's mothering instincts. Good to talk to you, Nick. Thanks for that. Bristol, hello, Tiago.
Oh, hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Given the topic of dogs, I thought I'll give you a call. I only caught the end of the dog behaviorist, so I hope I'm not repeating what she said too much. But, you know, as a dog owner, someone who actually dedicated my life to raise a well-behaved dog, I'm as frustrated as anyone else with, you know, the menace of uncontrolled, dangerous dog breeding. At the same time, I've been living in the UK for 20 years, and I've seen breed-specific legislation. You know, this thing we're having with the bullies now, we had it a while back with something else, if I, you know, recall well, and what comes of it? Not much.
Nothing at all. I see those dogs all over the place. People I've seen them off the lead, just like, traipsing after some bloke down a high street. And
if anything, makes it worse, because when people are breeding to try and surpass legislation, they are breeding even more recklessly because they're trying to catch up with as the law gets moved. So, you know, back then, if people would breed a dog, even if it's dangerous or not, there was some thought into temperament, into the performance, what is it meant to. Now, when people are trying to just kind of, like, find a loophole, then they would just focus on size to meet certain criteria and just generate even a worse dog. But rather than complaining about the litter that gets done, I thought maybe I'll try to kind of, like, think about what could actually be done that would not necessarily, you know, be a blanket ban in some breeds. Because, you know, Stuffies, they had such a bad reputation for so long. And I've met the most loving and adorable Stuffies.
Well, they were at that moment.
Well, but the thing is that there is no such thing as a bad dog. There are bad owners.
Oh, yes, there is. Of course there is a thing called, such a thing as a bad dog. Of course there is.
Well, there are dogs that have the potential to cause a lot of harm.
This is the same argument as guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Okay, I'll concede. There is a world perhaps that some breeds shouldn't exist, but that wouldn't necessarily only extend to big, dangerous breeds, because at the same time, as the behaviorists pointed out, we should stop breeding dogs that cannot breathe. or dogs that will...
that's a side issue, really. We're talking about the safety of people who own their own dog. I mean, that people are getting killed by their own dogs is remarkable enough, but I'm less concerned about that than people being killed by other people's dogs just because they happen to be walking in a park in the wrong moment. And I go back to, if it was a drug, the government would ban it, without question.
I would not come on air and try to play the kumbaya and the whole kind of like, we can all live happy if we just, you know, do the right thing about raising dogs. Yes, you know, I take your argument. You know, there are dogs that present a danger. But that won't change unless legislation actually apply across the breeding, the rearing, and the trading of dogs as a whole. So it needs from a top-down thing. The fact that when I was trying to buy a perfectly docile dog, I found myself in a wild west of people advertising online, you know, trying to find a breeder, there's responsible licenses, all that. So if that is when a responsible person is trying to get a dog responsibly, is a quagmire. You know, when people are not giving you two thoughts, right, we end up with what we end up.
Right, exactly. So I can't get past why are people who have dogs allowed to potentially ruin the lives of other people who don't have dogs just because, you know, they like something that likes them. I just don't get it. But thanks for that, Tiago. As Hannah Malloy said, I'm not a dog owner. So cats can't kill you. That's pretty clear. Neither can hamsters or goldfish. Maybe get one of those. I know that's a controversial thing to say, but I've just said it anyway. Now, I'm going to change it after the news. Coming up, NATO has formed an integral part of the UK's defence since 1949, but with Trump's anti-European stance, is it time to break away from this model? That's what a former NATO chief thinks. Anders Rasmussen has proposed a new coalition of the willing, which would see 35 nations brought together, led by France and the UK, to bolster Europe and Ukraine's security. Do you agree with him? Is NATO still fit for purpose, or should we go our own way? 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. Buckingham Palace says the King and Queen are looking forward to their state visit to the US after confirmation it will still go ahead tomorrow. There had been concerns it would be postponed following the shooting at an event being attended by President Trump and the First Lady in Washington. Sir Mark Lyle Grant is a former UK ambassador to the United Nations and has been telling LBC there is little to worry about.
They have their own security and they will be in touch with the American security, but, you know, King Charles has been on a lot of overseas visits in a lot more dangerous places than United States of America. So I don't think he'll be concerned about that. No, he knows that their hosts will look after him extremely well.
The Prime Minister is due to say he's calling time on shoplifting while outlining new measures tomorrow. Sir Keir Starmer is also expected to announce an end to the effective immunity for thieves who take goods worth less than £200. He'll also promise an extra 3,000 neighbourhood police officers. A former Conservative minister is urging peers in the Lords to back his plan to ban under-16s from social media. Lord Nash has been campaigning for the age limit and says politicians have a final chance to act. LBC's Jonathan Ray has more.
Peers have insisted on a change in the law on social media access three times as part of the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill. But during the so-called ping-pong process, where new legislation is passed back and forth between both Houses of Parliament, MPs most recently rejected the proposals on Wednesday. The bill's now due back in the Lords, so a government amendment can be considered. Lord Nash is urging his colleagues to reject it.
Political leaders at Stormont have been united in their condemnation following an explosion outside a police station in Northern Ireland. Island. Homes had to be evacuated after a car detonated at Dunmurry outside Belfast. The Prime Minister says those responsible will be brought to justice. A man's being held for questioning over what's been called a significant fire at an LGBTQ plus nightclub in Milton Keynes. It happened at around 2 o'clock this morning. A 51-year-old man from the city is being questioned on the suspicion of arson with intent to endanger life. And in sport and in tennis, the British men's number one, Cameron Norrie, has gone through to the last 16 of the Madrid Open. He beat Argentina's Thiago Agustin Tirinte in straight sets. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the UK, chilly in countryside areas with a low of around 4 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
The former head of NATO has urged Britain and France to lead a new European NATO, warning that Europe must be prepared to act without the US. Anders Fogh Rasmussen, who served as the Secretary General of NATO from 2009 to 2014, proposed expanding the Coalition of the Willing, that group of 35 nations brought together by France and the UK in early 2025 to help defend Ukraine. Well, let's talk about this with Roger McMillan. Roger is a counter-terrorism expert and joins us on the line now. Hello, Roger.
Good evening.
Do you think NATO is finished, regardless of what Donald Trump says now? Because it's based on trust, isn't it? Trust that members will go to the aid of another country under attack. And he's implied that America might not.
I don't think NATO is finished. I think NATO still has a lot of good to offer. But I think it's definitely a wake-up call for the NATO countries. We do rely heavily upon the Americans for support, not just in military support, but also technical and equipment support. And I think it's the wake-up call that Europe has perhaps needed to start taking our own responsibility for our own defence.
Just about NATO itself and what Donald Trump has been saying about it, because he seems exercised that NATO has not done his bidding, essentially. I mean, to be clear, NATO is not a weapon for Donald Trump to use to bash a country he's in dispute with, is it?
Absolutely not. And I think people have to remember this, when we'd all come together to support another country, that is when a country has been attacked under Article 5. And that the last time the Article 5 was enacted was after the 9/11 disaster.
It's the only time it's been enacted, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes. Do you think that we have actually relied on the United States to be the backbone of the defence of the West?
I think that's a very fair assessment. They have been there to support us. They have taken the brunt, the lion's share of activity. And to many extents, the purpose is that the European countries, the West, has allowed that to happen, as you can see with the demise of the Western European military nations, seriously underfunded, seriously undermanned, and seriously underpowered.
We're underfunded, our military is underfunded compared to America. America, I believe, spends more on its military than the next 10 highest spending countries put together. And the implication is that America is essentially doing us a favour by spending that much. But they're not doing us a favour at all, are they? They're just funneling vast amounts of American taxpayer money into the defence industry.
I think that's another very fair assessment. Is that's where it goes. It goes to provide the weaponry that they will then ultimately use. We still need to keep up our own fair share, make sure that our own troops and our own forces are well-prepared, well-equipped, and well-motivated for whatever comes in the future.
Well, let's talk about our forces then. Would it make sense to have an EU military force? Just one combined force within the EU?
I don't think so. I think that is something that has been talked about for a number of years, but I don't think that would work. I think there are too many sort of political differences on, for example, rules of engagement, what people are willing to go and do, etc. It would make it too difficult. And I think this concept is is inadvisable. It's the wrong answer to the right problem. And it's perhaps something we don't want to go down the route of. Whereas the coalition of the willing is something that is perhaps, with work, could be made to actually be effective.
Is there no way that some sort of combined force, though, could eliminate duplication of resources, harness particular expertise of the various countries, and actually end up costing less?
I think there's a huge amount of work being done in NATO, across NATO in the last few years. You have to look at the last 25 years. You have the rapid reaction forces that have been set up, the CORs, and those have been particularly effective. They are interoperable, but there's a lot of work that has to go into doing it. It's not something that happens overnight.
So what do you think about Anders Rasmussen's idea? Would it make sense to have another pact with the EU, an EU NATO, a Europe, well, not EU necessarily, but a European NATO, to supplement or maybe supersede the NATO agreement?
I think what he's proposing does make an awful lot of sense. And because what we're actually doing here is pulling together a capable states-only vehicle, avoiding the people who perhaps wouldn't necessarily be involved, expanding it out to, you know, some significant non-EU NATO members, such as the UK, Norway and Turkey, and of course Ukraine. It does build on the existing structure with the functioning headquarters based in Paris and 35 committed nations. I think also it's important to note that Ukraine structurally is in there, but it also turns it from being a beneficiary into a contributor in the long term.
Yes, particularly because the country, just by dint of its geography, is a buffer, really, between the rest of Europe and Russia.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think consolidation with other NATO countries without America would mean that we could possibly be upended by a future rogue leader of another NATO partner?
And this is why I think we need to continue to work to make sure that the Americans remain part of NATO, see that the value in it, and hopefully that if they see the Europe and UK to be playing their part in the defensive side, then they will stay at the table. I don't think it's as simple as them just leaving NATO. That doesn't happen overnight, and it will take a number of years to go and do that, if indeed Donald Trump wants to go down that route. So it's something we still have to play for. It still has a very valuable role. But this sort of coalition of the willing, the expanded coalition of the willing, is something that, you know, it will be there to complement NATO for other types of mission.
It's a bit difficult to make any plans based on what you are hearing from Donald Trump, because it does tend to change on a daily basis, doesn't it?
It changes quicker than that sometimes, and it can change from one to the other within a matter of hours. I think that, you know, still the diplomatic level, there's a huge amount of engagement between the NATO countries, certainly between the US and the UK. And, you know, this is something perhaps King Charles will be discussing with Donald Trump on his forthcoming visit.
Do you think, so what you're saying is that the relationship between America and the rest of Europe and NATO more generally is not as bad as Donald Trump is painting it?
I think it has been painted badly in the media. I think he is particularly upset because, as you said, we've not sort of bent to his will and just turned up for a war in the Middle East, which is not, you know, something that NATO is permitted to do under the rules. So I think, you know, this is something that still needs to be worked upon, and showing our real intent and commitment to our own European security is part of that.
Do you think that it is beyond the realm of possibility that we might find ourselves at war with America? Because Trump has repeatedly said that he will take Greenland by force if necessary.
I think Donald Trump, he's mentioned this many times, but he has the ability to put his troops in there due to the long-standing agreements they have between Denmark, Greenland, and the US, and indeed with NATO. I think we'll be able to de-escalate from an all-out war on the Northern Front, though.
But do you think that this is the new normal for America? I mean, do you think this aggressive stance towards Europe will outlast his presidency? Because it is part of the Republicans' Project 2025. isn't it? To sort of pivot Europe away from democracy, essentially, and to install right-wing governments wherever they can.
I mean, it's not been particularly effective in the last term. Look what happened just a few weeks ago, and a few days ago in Hungary. I do think, though, that the diplomatic element to all of this will prevail, and you know we will be able to find the common ground and the middle ground again.
And if the EU were to fashion a European Defence Force, should we be in it, or continue to rely on the kindness of American strangers, as we appear to be doing now?
No, I think UK as part of the coalition of the willing. And after all, next year it will be the headquarters will move to London, and with this European sort of coalition, it's important that we form a leading role in that. It'll be done with co-led with France. And we will have a significant number of countries in there who will contribute to this. And we'll be able to take our European security far more seriously and show that intent. And also at the same time as be able to rebuild our own military industrial complex in Europe.
Do you think that Anders Rasmussen is somewhat overstating the issue here in calling for the countries of Europe to lead a new European NATO? Because there's already a provision in EU law, isn't there, that resembles that NATO Article 5 that calls for military, humanitarian and financial aid of another EU member if it is attacked. Is that not enough to protect EU countries without American aid?
I think that has been proven to be quite an unwieldy document. And I appreciate what you're saying. I do agree. You can't just have more legislation and create another organization for a problem. But actually, there's a potential for this coalition of the willing to, if they can sort out a number of the issues, and it's not sort out everything, it doesn't resolve rules of engagement. It doesn't involve the air domain problem over Ukraine, as no one wants to take that on. It doesn't resolve any decision-making body's legal basis or anything in relation to national parliaments. And, of course, there's still the capability gap. You know, the thing, the state of numbers between 25 and 30,000 troops is that's a very thin deterrent against a significantly larger Russian military. It does go a long way, though, to proving this capability. And it is just designed at the moment for one scenario. But we could potentially develop that out into different scenarios for the future.
Yes, is that scenario based on how war used to be fought? Because the Ukraine war is now being fought in a way that is almost completely different to how we are used to thinking of how war is conducted.
Absolutely. My own experiences in 2003 are entirely different to this current generation of warfare. Even the warfare that we saw, had seen just in the last few weeks in the Iran conflict is very much different to what it was 23 years ago. So we are seeing definitely a change in the character of war, the use of novel technologies, the use of very cheap technologies to have a strategic impact as well as even, dare I say, the use of AI on the information operations campaigns.
Yeah, and that AI is mostly American-led at the moment, and we would presumably be going cap in hand to Donald Trump, or whoever happens to be running America at the time, to beg for the use of that. But do you think an agreement with Trump that we help him with Iran, for instance, if he promises to help Europe with Ukraine and any future trouble with AI, do you think an agreement with him would actually be worth the paper it's written on? Because he doesn't appear to think that any deals he signs limit him in any way.
I think to do a deal for Iran and to invest in support for Ukraine, I think there's a lot more to it than just some of the comments that we've seen in recent weeks. Initially, the military aims seemed to be regime change, which pivoted quickly just to the nuclear deal, again pivoted to the Strait of Hormuz. And what we also have to remember here that there is a 35 million people who are living in fear and of the regime in Iran. And I think we need to make sure that whatever we're going to do at some point in any sort of future part of this conflict, be it in a maritime capacity to perhaps to police the Strait of Hormuz, we have to be very looked at very, very carefully as to what we get. But going back to the point you made about AI, I think if we were to decouple from the US, we would be at significant risk because we would no longer have access, as you intimated, to such novel technologies as AI, as the space technologies, and a lot of the cyber capabilities that the US brings. And we would take an awful long time to get us back up to the speed of where we would. So we'd never be on the front foot. So a total decoupling from the US is highly unwise.
Yes, and given that, are we more vulnerable now outside the European Union because we are, as I sort of mentioned before, we are now relying overly much on the kindness of the States?
Being outside of the EU has put us at risk in many ways. But it also has given us opportunities which as yet we have not yet seized. And we should be really looking to, from a security perspective, is of investing heavily into our defence industrial complex back in the UK. We have phenomenal technologies, we have phenomenal companies who are based in the UK, and we can invest in them to allow them to deliver the technology and the innovation that we've always been so good at.
What do you make of the government's tightrope walk around all this?
I mean, it's almost a robbing Peter to pay Paul. You hear one thing one day and one thing the next. And, you know, I wish as Lord Robertson commented recently, that the investment plan, which was supposed to have been released recently, you know, months ago, hasn't been done. The Defence Review came out last year. Nothing has happened on this. And we are still waiting. And the longer we wait, the longer we delay, the more our adversaries get ahead of us and the more difficult it is for us to catch up.
Very good to talk to you, sir. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate that very much. That's Roger McMillan, the counter-terrorism expert. What do you think? Do we have to accept that America is not our friend anymore? That we cannot rely on them anymore? And do you think that that unreliability will outlast Trump, that this is actually how America is going to be run now? Are we hopelessly chasing after Trump's favours? Should we actually be trying to extricate ourselves from America politically and commercially? And on that last note, have you changed your shopping habits based on how Trump has been using America as a weapon against us? Every little helps. 0345-6060-973 LBC.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why don't you get the Prime Minister on the phone and say, come on, Sir Keir, we've actually got to show some action here.
Straight to the point.
You're going backwards.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This is not a one-off incident.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Caulfield.
And I'm Joni Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Search kayaks for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak. And go see for yourself.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So the former head of NATO has urged Britain and France to lead a new European NATO, warning that Europe must be prepared to act without the US. Has the US actually ceased to become our friend and is actually now acting more like an enemy? Should we actually be trying to get as far away from America rather than chasing after them, hoping for favours? And what do you think of a combined European force, an EU-wide military? Wouldn't that solve our underfunding problem straight away? I mean, it would immediately bolster our capability without any extra expense and probably save us money, perhaps, well, I don't know about probably, but perhaps, through the elimination of duplicate resources that we would have with the rest of our European friends. And what about Brexit now? I mean, it seems to have been bad for us as far as trade goes, but is it actually terrible regarding our security, being as how dependent we seem to have become on US defence? 0345
6060 973.
Bexley, Suki.
Oh, hi, Nick.
Suki.
Hi. I think Europe needs to break its dependence upon America, because going forward, America is going to become, you know, sort of like unstable due to financial crises. And Ukraine has shown the future warfare, because the drone technology and, you know, automated, units that they're developing, automated soldiers, because Europe won't have the manpower with an aging population.
But doesn't that solve that problem? That if we're going to robotize war, then it doesn't really matter how old we are.
Well, yes. But, you know, sort of like we have two constraints at the moment. We have, you know, financial, because all of the European countries on their own trying to do everything, cover all the bases, can't. So combined, they could specialise, you know, in what they do best. And also, you know, so like with an ageing population, you're going to have a manpower problem, as Russia has, you know, sort of like shown that it's lost almost, you know, 1.4, 1.5 million men injured or killed, and it's got an ageing population. So Europe has to come together and be less reliant on the US.
Yes, that would assume that in the future we are as friendly and with our European allies, and they are as friendly among themselves as is the case now, which might not necessarily be true.
Well, I mean, that is purely due to our political system. Because we have, you know, extreme swings between, you know, the left and the right. And with something like a change in our political voting system, like PR, would provide a lot more stability, because you wouldn't have, you know, sort of like zigzag political changes all the time.
We wouldn't be charging to the right and then 5 years later charging to the left.
And people are left, you know, wondering what's going on and, you know, sort of like... And they tend to get fed up with, you know, sort of like one set of politicians. They throw them out and then elect the other set who turn out to be equally as bad. So, you know, so, and now, you know, so like, and then you have basically rogue actors like, you know, Farage, who come on the scene promising you all manner of things, and he will be, you know, equally as disappointing, if not more so, as, you know, some of these county council elections have shown.
Well, he would probably be equally as disappointing as every other leader of a political party has been in our living memory. There's no indication why that wouldn't be true. He's, by many measures, they're all the blooming same. Of course, they aren't, but effectively, they kind of are. Thanks for that, Suki. 0345 6060 973. Witham, Alex.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
So I was listening to your expert on the first caller, and I think the US commitment to NATO has been shaky for the last 10 years, really, due to Trump and the polarization of politics in his wake. And obviously, Joe Biden did his very best by bringing the likes of Sweden and Finland into the fold. But really, it's been a matter of commitment with the United States for the last 10 years, because it's always been a case of transactions with Trump or domestic politics and concerns with Joe Biden. And so I find myself now going back to Mark Carney's speech at Davos about the middle powers. And to some extent, we're already doing this with the Coalition of the Willing regarding Ukraine, but also this new movement with regards to the Strait of Hormuz. And so, really, what I think we should do is create a parallel organization to NATO, basically copy all of the really important, relevant bits across, but also take this opportunity with Mark Carney's speech in mind to invite the other middle powers as well, even though they're not in Europe. So the likes of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and possibly even Japan. Because I can't think of a stronger bulwark against the likes of totalitarianism and fascism than having the most powerful democracies in the world all join forces.
Yeah, it's entirely believable that the middle powers would be together more powerful than the few superpowers that exist at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the European Union just alone, that already is a diplomatic, economic and regulatory heavyweight. So that alone can contend with the likes of China and the United States. So just by adding on the likes of the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, is going to bolster that even more.
Yes, and the money involved doesn't necessarily create the result that the people who are selling that equipment would make you believe. I mean, if America can't defeat Iran, in fact, it's hard to remember the last time America actually did win a war, and they spend on their military more than the next 10 highest spending countries put together. So they cry about the amount of money that the rest of the world is, or the rest of NATO at least, is spending on its military. But as Ukraine has shown, you don't need to spend a boatload of money on fancy kit. Cheap stuff will do the job. Thanks for that, Alex. 0345-6060-973. We're going to take more of your calls on this subject. Whether you think a combined European force, an EU-wide military, is something to consider, and if there was one, wouldn't it be smart for us to join that? And if we do that, then wouldn't it be actually smart to be within the European Union, leading it, rather than outside, again, hoping for favours from the bigger partner? 0345-6060-973. Take more of your calls on that. We're going to take a news break, after which Labour has stepped up its plans to offset potential war-related shortages. But will it make any difference? We'll come to that in just a moment. It's 11:30, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
Buckingham Palace says the King and Queen are looking forward to their state visit to the US after confirmation it will still go ahead tomorrow. There had been concerns it would be postponed following the shooting at an event being attended by President Trump. The Prime Minister is due to say he's calling time on shoplifting while outlining new measures tomorrow. Sir Keir Starmer's also expected to announce an end to the effective immunity for thieves who take goods worth less than £200. And a man's been held for questioning over what's being called a significant fire at an LGBTQ+ nightclub in Milton Keynes. A 51-year-old man from the city is being questioned on the suspicion of arson with intent to endanger life. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the country. Feeling chilly in the countryside as well. We'll see a low of around 4 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
McDonald's cards are here. 24 cards to find and free food in every pack. Enter cards in the McDonald's app and complete sets with over £4 million in cash prizes to be won. McDonald's cards. 18 plus UK only with selected meals subject to availability. Ends 27th of April. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's
it's a good look on you, Steve. Oh, actually, this is very relaxed. George is up the river cam without a paddle. Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own. In a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners, Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
The closure of the Strait of Hormuz, as we all know now, having all become experts on the Strait of Hormuz, is a key shipping lane that once carried a fifth of global oil and gas, and its closure has sent oil prices soaring since the US-Israel war on Iran began. But there have been other consequences as well, which the government is now having to wrestle with. Let's talk about this with Kevin Schofield. Kevin is the political editor of HuffPost UK and joins us on the line now. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
I've got one question to start. I could ask it two ways. One way is the government couldn't have predicted that Israel and America would attack Iran, and they couldn't have predicted that Iran would find that they can hold the world to ransom by closing the strait. There's no hope of preparing for that, regardless of which party was in power. Another way of asking it is, could the government have made plans to counter the effects of any stupid thing that flitted across Donald Trump's mind?
No, I think is the honest answer. I mean, I think there had been a build-up of American military in the region, so we knew that an attack on Iran was probably on the cards, but the way it happened certainly was not pre-warned to the government. And also the impact of the Strait of Hormuz, I mean, I guess had Donald Trump even thought for one second to consult other countries before going ahead with this military action, that may well have been one of the possible scenarios that could have been suggested to him to make him think twice, perhaps. But obviously with Donald Trump, he doesn't think twice. He barely thinks once. He went ahead and did it. And unfortunately, we've all got to live with the consequences. Now, it wasn't unforeseen, I guess, that were he to go ahead with Israel and bomb Iran, that they may retaliate in this way. But I think it's probably safe to say that no one knew that they would be able to do it so effectively and that it would have such a negative impact on the global economy.
Yeah, I bet among the people who were quite surprised by it are the Iranians themselves, who always perhaps had it in mind that they might try doing something like this, but can't quite get past the feeling that it has been so very successful.
Well, absolutely. You know, they've spent all this time trying to acquire a nuclear weapon, and that has been the subject of negotiations with America under Obama, for instance, who struck the deal to limit their nuclear ambitions. Who knew that all they really needed to do, rather than bother about getting a nuclear bomb, was to close the Strait of Hormuz, and they would bring the global economy to its knees. And they've done it remarkably successfully, and lo and behold, as you just so rightly said, the price of oil has spiked. That has such knock-on consequences for prices at the pumps, and it will unfortunately start feeding through into prices in the shops as well, the longer that this closure then goes on.
Yes, because we haven't really started to notice the effects yet. I mean, the price at the pumps is a very visible indicator of the fact that something is up, but it hasn't really filtered through to the price of everything else yet, has it? But it will.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, things like fertilizer, obviously a key material, that is going to be affected. That is, for farmers, that's going to obviously become much more expensive. Therefore, the cost of growing food will become much more expensive. Therefore, the cost of food in the shops will be much more expensive. And the ramifications are absolutely enormous, because once inflation starts to be consistently above target, then interest rates will probably have to rise to try and bring that under control, which means more expensive mortgages for people, and you know, then less money in their pocket. The cost of living crisis continues. This was supposed to be the year when the government was going to properly get on top of the cost of living crisis. It's actually, so far anyway, it looks as though it's actually getting worse. So politically, this couldn't have come at a worse time for Keir Starmer, who's obviously already dealing with all sorts of other problems politically also.
Yeah, the economy was starting to tick up, wasn't it? I mean, we would have had a budget surplus by 2029, according to the OBR. The economy grew by 0.5% in February. Is decline now inevitable, do you think?
I think it probably is inevitable. You speak to ministers and they will tell you that off the record, certainly, and it will become reality very soon. You're right, the economy grew higher than expected in February, which would have been a great news for the government maybe a couple of months ago. But now, if you notice, they weren't really singing about it from the rooftops because they know what is coming down the tracks, that the economy is going to effectively grind to a halt. Despite all the efforts that they've put in to try and grow the economy, events out with their control, i.e. the war in Iran, is going to obviously have a huge impact on it. But ordinary people don't really see it that way. They will look at, well, the government promised to grow the economy. The economy's not growing, therefore we'll blame the government. And that is the difficulty that Keir Starmer is going to find himself with. People aren't going to blame Donald Trump at the ballot box. They're going to have to blame the government. And that's a problem that they're going to have to try and solve. Because, of course, when Labour were in opposition, they were remorselessly attacking Liz Truss's government at the time of the Ukraine invasion and the effect that had on the economy, when in actual fact, in reality, there wasn't a lot that they could do about it because that was an external event. And again, now they're seeing that for themselves. So they're obviously having to deal with the consequences, and it's going to be very difficult indeed.
Yeah, Chancellors of the Exchequer can be lucky with the circumstances outside their control. Rachel Reeves has been dealt a pretty bad hand here, hasn't she?
Undoubtedly, she has. I mean, the government, when they came in, as we know, took getting a lot of unpopular decisions on winter fuel payments, for instance. They had to U-turn on that event. It did look, as you rightly said, look as though things were starting to turn around a little bit. Inflation was predicted to come down to even below target by the end of the year. Interest rates, they were looking at maybe another couple of interest rate reductions from the Bank of England this year. No one's talking about that anymore. They're actually talking about potentially interest rate increases. So yeah, she's been dealt a very bad hand. This is through no fault of her own, but you know, it's a bit like pass the parcel. If the music stops and you're holding the present, then unfortunately you've got to take the consequences. And it's the same right now. Rachel Reeves is the Chancellor when these events have happened, and she's the one that's going to have to deal with the consequences, and they're not going to be great for her party, unfortunately.
Let's talk about some of the things that are going to see shortages. We're told that we are uniquely vulnerable to gas shortages in this country. Why is that?
Well, I think that's for two reasons. One, because we don't have enough gas storage, and that is on the government and probably successive governments. We don't have enough gas stored for these types of eventualities. And also, we import so much gas, which means that, you know, if there is a global shortage, then there isn't as much for us to buy. Or if we do have to buy it, it costs much more to buy because of the scarcity of supply. So it's a double whammy. That, again, you know, the government can't completely absolve itself of the blame for that. You know, the government, one of the things about government is they've got to try and plan for all negative eventualities. So if they get caught on the hop in this way, then I guess people can rightly point the finger of blame at the government, and unfortunately it'll be people like you and me and your listeners who will have to pay for it through higher bills, unfortunately. And again, that simply adds to the cost of living crisis, which the government had promised to get on top of, but if anything, it looks like it's going to be even worse.
It seems a bit harsh to blame this government for our lack of gas storage, though. I mean, we had the Rough gas storage facility, which was wound down under previous governments, under the Tories, I believe, to the point that now, apparently, we've got 12 days worth of gas reserves, whereas Germany has 90 and France has 100. And these things don't happen overnight. And again, it's politics, I suppose, but the blame will be laid at the feet of the people who aren't responsible for the problem.
No, you're absolutely right, but you've just got to think, if the shoe was on the other foot, if this was a Conservative government and Labour were in opposition, Labour would be absolutely laying into the Conservatives and blaming them. So, you know, that is just the way politics work. So sometimes the criticism that you make of a government in opposition comes back to haunt you, and I think that's probably what's going to happen for Labour. And I'll go back to the point I made earlier that, you know, ordinary voters probably don't follow politics in the way that geeks like myself do, and they'll just say, well, you'll look at the government and say, well, you promised to bring down my bills. You haven't brought down my bills. In fact, they're going up. Mm. You've broken your promise, therefore I will punish you. So that is just the way it works. The government is well aware of that, and that's why they're so concerned that to try and bring this war to an end as quickly as possible, and at least try and get the Strait of Hormuz reopened as quickly as possible. Yeah. Unfortunately, right now, it doesn't look as if it's on the horizon.
And even if you don't have gas in your house, it's still going to affect you anyway, because our electricity, bizarrely, is priced according to the power of the power source of last resource, which is, in our case, gas. So our electric bills are going to go up as well.
Yep, exactly. There's no respite, really, for, even as you say, even people who don't have gas in their house are still going to feel the pinch, unfortunately. That everyone's energy bills, basically, are going to go up. The energy price cap right now has actually come down between April and June. So I think we should make the most of it right now over the next 3 months, because I think it looks inevitable that from July onwards, the price cap is going to go up. Therefore, their bills are going to go up. Now, at the moment, we're coming into summer, the weather's a bit warmer, so people aren't using as much energy, but it could well be that bills start going up at precisely the worst time, because going into the winter, it gets colder, people put on the central heating, and they use more energy, and their bills go up. So it's a perfect storm, really.
Yes, and it's not even confined to fertiliser, which we talked about, gas, electricity. It's also CO2, which is sourced from that area of the map. And it's more than just bubbles in a Coca-Cola, isn't it?
Absolutely. Carbon dioxide is used as a preservative. So the food, like salad, you see on the shelf, carbon dioxide is used to make the food, fresh food, last longer. So if you're not getting carbon dioxide, then food isn't fresh for as long. So it's a preservative as well as things like putting bubbles in beer, for instance. So I read a story about how breweries are really worried about this as well, because it means that they don't have the carbon dioxide to carbonate beer. So there could be a beer shortage in this country, which, if you're a football fan looking ahead to the World Cup, you're probably thinking of a few beers, and that could be running short as well. So that would be a worst-case scenario, I think. So, it's unfortunately, there's no good news right now.
Yes.
We
won't even be able to drown our sorrows.
Well, exactly.
What's going to happen to the airline industry? Because airline fuel is also comes from through the Strait of Hormuz. Do you think that travel might be rationed?
Well, potentially, you know, jet fuel, you're right, could well be rationed or at least be running low. That would then be up to individual airlines, I guess, to decide whether or not it's economical for them to run certain routes. Now, the government is desperately trying to insist that there's no prospect of a jet fuel shortage at the moment, but I think we're already seeing it around the world that certain air journeys are being cut back. And, you know, again, we're coming into the holiday season. The absolute nightmare scenario for the government, I guess, is if people find that the holidays that they had booked and thought they were going on suddenly cancelled effectively because they can't fly there, which again is an absolute nightmare scenario for people who, you know, the one thing that they've been saving up for all year, really looking forward to a summer holiday, and suddenly it's snatched away from them. And again, I'll come back to the point I made that the government of the day tends to be the one who people blame, even if it isn't their fault, but that's just the way politics works, unfortunately.
Yes. The government recently increased the minimum wage by a little bit to howls of outrage from the usual suspects. If inflation starts to tick up, do you think they should raise it some more?
Well, they'll certainly be under pressure. People will be saying that. Businesses, though, I think will push back pretty hard on that. They'll say, look, we're already suffering over initial rise from minimum wage. Employment costs are going up. National insurance increases, obviously. So, yeah, I can imagine people look up to people. It's not really the big, bigger rash as it was before inflation started. Well, I think that's another extra pressure we've got. Pretty hard on, I think.
Kevin, we appear to be losing contact with you. That's just mobile phones for you. But I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for that. Kevin Schofield, political editor of HuffPost UK. Now, the number here, if you've got a landline, that would be great. It's 0345 6060 973. If you have any thoughts on that, then be glad to hear from you. But we were talking about the possibility of NATO failing, and perhaps the emergence of a European NATO, which we could be a part of. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Hey there, it's your big McDonald's hunger corner. And it's not just any kind of hunger. It's the kind that calls for Big Arch. Start with juicy beef, cheddar cheese and Big Arch sauce. Oh, and don't forget those crispy onions. Hungry? You are now.
Served from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, back to the crisis that's gripping NATO because of Donald Trump's lack of support, really. I suppose there's no other way of putting it. Doesn't seem that keen. So should we extricate ourselves from America and go alone with the rest of Europe? Glasgow. Hello, Eric.
Mike, hey, pal.
Eric.
The president's got, I think, just short of 2 years left in power. Is that correct? Something like 18 months?
Well, I'd be surprised if he left, but those are the rules. Yes.
Right. So the commotion or the excitement that these two prominent men... Do you know what I think it is, Nick, to be honest, right? I think it is these men are that old now that they want to cause war because nothing excites them downstairs anymore.
Which men are we talking about?
Oh, Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump. I think they're that old.
Right.
I think that they need to cause some sort of trouble or be seen to having some sort of excitement for the remainder of their life on the planet because... They're all
getting their vicarious thrills outside the bedroom.
Got it. Basically, that's what it is. I think I don't think there's any other logic behind it, to be honest. And what sort of but going back to NATO, God bless NATO. NATO could be the new protector of what would be great if they'd done something like getting. I don't know, small islands or other parts of the world to join, not as a NATO, but as a global sort of NATO. You know, like people get, even people like China, or asking other countries to say, can we not all stick together here? Because if everybody rallied round and put America and Russia to the side, then we'd be all right.
Well, yes, I'm sure that would delight China. Everything that's happening at the moment seems to be in Russia's favour. I mean, if Vladimir Putin had written a wish list, would it look a bit like everything that Donald Trump has done since he came to power? Weaken and attack the EU, prop up oil prices, and cancel the embargo on Russian energy. and so on and so on and so on. It seems as though it's not America first, it's Putin first. I'm sure that's not true, but that's what it looks like. Thanks for that, Eric. 0345 6060 973. Oxford, hello, Matt.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the line.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, it was just, so NATO, well, if NATO does get strong, it's by accident, not design, which is a problem from the beginning. It's kind of only been galvanized in a mutual distrust of Trump, which I'm not saying is unreasonable, but that's kind of what's... And we're, as we all know, very, very weak. We're not even part of Europe. They're still pretty peeved, shall we say, at us, and they're in a position... We're still making these overtures to them and overtures, or we were, to Trump. And the great obsession with Trump, and I find it so strange because I'm not a huge fan of the man, but he is remarkable. I mean, there's this business with the latest assassination I heard. I know it's kind of tied in with NATO, the latest assassination. I listen across the radio. I've only got a radio. I don't do TV and I don't have a laptop and things. So I just listen to what people are saying. And it's so strange that in order to destroy Trump, I mean, in order to demonstrate the enmity, it's impossible, it seems, to recognize any strengths when they're so clearly staring us in the face. And that just...
What are his strengths that are staring us in the face?
Well, I mean, he is remarkable. I mean, everybody's obsessed with him for a start. That's remarkable. Not necessarily in a good way, but everybody seems to be obsessed with him.
Do you not understand why that is? He's the world's most powerful man, and he acts like a child with a machine gun.
Absolutely, and this is the thing. Yeah, you're right. I agree with you about that. He's kind of like, there's this syndrome, I think. I've had reason to be advised to look at certain things in my own personality and in my life, and I was introduced to the notion of King Baby Syndrome, and the moment you say the phrase, you immediately hype to Trump, King Baby.
Right.
It perfectly describes him. But
where are his plus points?
Well, as I say, I mean, he has a great deal of stamina. doesn't he? I mean, really, seriously, doesn't he?
His positive points are that he can stay awake long enough to do more evil things.
Do you really think that it's that simple? And if that's the attitude I take to Trump, then how will I have any strength with him? Because I'm simply dismissing him. I'm not able to see him clearly. And that
well, you keep talking about his positive... I mean, I don't really want to get bogged down into this, but I am curious, and I've asked you several times, and all you came up with was he's got stamina. Well, that's not really the indicator of a good leader. But I appreciate that, Matt. Streatham. Hello, Robbie.
Yeah, good evening, Nick. Every time I hear your name, Nick a Boat, I think of the boat people.
Right. I'll remember that.
Nick a Boat.
Yeah, except that's not what it is, but anyway.
Well, it's similar. Anyway, it's just a joke. I don't know how many people have said that to you before.
None. Not one single one.
Oh, it's the first time then. Well, it's the first time for everything.
One of those unfunny jokes I've heard so much about. Go ahead. What point will you want to make?
Well, actually, just to get to the point of today's, yesterday's issues of the alleged assassination, that was a setup. That's the first thing.
It was a setup in what way?
Well, it was a setup simply because what guy would carry several guns and knives as well? Was he going to get close enough to Trump to stab him? I don't think so.
I've got no idea. Difficult to put yourself in the mind of somebody who would launch an attack like that in the first place. Let's assume that he wasn't thinking straight.
Well, on top of that, those security guys would normally have shot him dead, but they didn't. They captured him. You know, they're marksmen. They would have shot him dead. There would have been no doubt about that.
Well, there is doubt about it, and I really don't want to go down a conspiracy theory rabbit hole, because I'm sure the internet is absolutely alive with it. That's probably where you want to be right now, Robbie, on social media. But thanks for that. Merthyr Tydfil, hello, Jeff.
Hey, Nick. The question you're raising of where can we go? I mean, it must be blatantly obvious to anybody that's just had a reasonable look at this situation. The only place we can go is Europe. Trump has made it perfectly blatantly obvious that we are on our own, or I'd say the UK.
It's worse than that, though, isn't it? Project 2025 actually prescribes the removal of European governments and their replacement with far right-wing regimes. That's part of Project 2025. And in the time of his second period in office, Trump has enacted at least half of all of the things that are in Project 2025. So he's coming for us.
Well, you know, when he's on this, he spends more time on this plane from Washington to Mar-a-Lago than any other time. All his interviews, his off-cuff interviews, are made on that plane. On one trip, they started asking him about this Donroe Doctrine.
Right.
A play on the Monroe Doctrine which was the whole... Yes, he said, I'm into that. Yes, I'm up for this. And I've never forgotten it. He said his very words. He's made it blatantly clear to everyone that we have nowhere else to go except into Europe. Okay. So where was Starmer in all of this? Okay. Nice guy. No problems. But if I can take you back prior to his election, his promise or his manifesto.
Who are we talking about now?
Starmer's manifesto. Right. I will govern this country the same way as this Tory gun, but we will do it better. That was basically his manifesto.
Right, it's not how I read it, but anyway.
Better.
Right.
You know, has this led to tears? Because instead of grasping the nettle and attempting to get back into some sort of single market arrangement with Europe to improve relations with Europe, we are still trying.
Because right, well, okay, but part of the manifesto was that he had red lines about the single market, etc., and we're not really talking about that. We're talking about our mutual defence, which is kind of different and goes beyond, the tariffs on sheep and whatever it is. But we ran out of time. Thanks, Jeff. In the last hour, King Charles alongside Queen Camilla are venturing across the pond for their second state visit with the US President to mark the country's 250 years of independence from us. The three-day trip is supposed to reaffirm and renew Britain's closest of friendships with America. That's a quote. But the Trump's tirade of social media posts against us is rather ruining what people still insist on calling the special relationship. Is there indeed such a thing? Should we be pandering to the president? Should the King and Queen actually be going? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The King and Queen are due to depart for the US later on today for their four-day state visit. There had been fears it would have to be postponed following the gun attack in Washington during an event President Trump was attending. The trip is being seen as a chance to repair relations between the US and the UK, which have worsened because of the war in Iran. But the former Home Office Minister, Norman Baker, has been telling LBC the visit probably won't change much in the long term.
He will be a sticking plaster for the time he's over there. Trump will probably behave himself and probably stop attacking Starmer. But it's a temporary thing, because as soon as the King goes home again, then hostilities will recur.
And there'll be more on this over the next half hour with Nick Abbott here on LBC. The Liberal Democrats are calling on the Prime Minister to ensure the King addresses the issue of the Falkland Islands during his visit to the US. The party's leader, Sir Ed Davey, says Sir Keir Starmer should advise the monarch to make it clear they are British sovereign territory. There have been reports Washington is considering a review of the UK's claim to the islands. Donald Trump has been giving interviews about Sunday morning's gun attack at the White House correspondent's dinner.
It was a little bit me. I wanted to see what was happening. And I wasn't making it that easy for him. I wanted to see what was going on.
A 31-year-old man is still being held by police in Washington. President Trump's been telling the U.S. network CBS about the moment shots were first heard at the Hilton Hotel in the U.S. Capitol. He says the U.S. Secret Service wanted him to crawl out of the venue.
I was standing up and then turned around the opposite direction and started pretty much walking out, pretty tall, a little bent over because I, you know, I'm not looking to be standing too tall. And but I was walking out. It was pretty about halfway there. And they said, please go down to the floor. Please go down to the floor. So I dropped to the floor. So did the first lady.
Half a dozen people are due before magistrates later on. Following reports, a van was driven into the gate of a drone factory in Leicestershire. They've been charged with causing criminal damage and burglary and were detained over events at the site in Braunston. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the country. Chilly in the countryside with a low of around 4 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Ed Davey has called for the King Charles state visit to the US to be cancelled. The Liberal Democrat leader condemned a leaked Pentagon email indicating that the US's support for Britain's sovereignty over the Falkland Islands could face review due to insufficient UK backing for American policy on Iran. Let's talk about this with Russell Myers. Russell is the Daily Mirror Royal Editor and joins us on the line now. Hello, Russell.
Hello, good evening, Nick.
We tried rolling out the royal family for Trump before, didn't we? We tried to use the so-called soft power on him. He loved the implied flattery, but it didn't do us any favours at all. Why keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result?
Well, it seems to be the actions of a pretty desperate government at the moment, and they've been coming in for some pretty heavy criticism, not only from Donald Trump, but obviously his administration. They've been very, very cavalier with their words about us not supporting the conflict in the Middle East, and you can see where the issue is, and it lies with Sir Keir Starmer, unfortunately.
Really? In what sense?
Well, I think that, you know, the King and Queen are here at the, or will be here tomorrow at the behest of the British government. And they seem to have been given a pretty difficult task at the moment because this is a very, very controversial visit. I mean, we're now talking about security issues at the 11th hour for the King and Queen after the event at Washington Hilton last night. There's obviously been criticism that they won't meet Jeffrey Epstein survivors. And, of course, the criticism that Trump keeps playing out up against the British government. So it's against them on all quarters, I think, at the moment.
Yes, but the visit was planned pre all of the things that you just mentioned, wasn't it? I mean, it was supposed to be you know, a moment of celebration, the America's 250th birth anniversary, and so on. These things don't happen overnight. I'm sure the planning for this was, you know, long term.
Well, you're quite right. It's been in the planning for about 6 months, but there have been obvious questions as to whether it would go ahead. I think that there's been detractors on both sides of the political argument about whether the King and Queen should be coming here. We didn't really know whether it was going to happen for certain up until a few weeks ago. But of course, there have been difficulties sort of throwing themselves at the King and Queen since it was announced. And I think that they are flying into a pretty difficult situation. Just to approach your first question about why are we still sending them here, I think your point about the 250th anniversary of the independence of the United States is obviously quite prevalent. That is an occasion where you would expect the King and Queen or certainly members of the royal family to attend. But of course, there are several other issues at play at the moment about this so-called special relationship. And I do think that the royal family are probably best placed to try and smooth relations over at this time.
Yes, I mean, we have taken all the insults, haven't we? That our troops in Afghanistan were cowards, essentially. That was the implication. That our Navy ships are toys. That he doesn't need our help in Iran because he won already. And then he criticizes us for not helping him in Iran. I mean, it's been a constant barrage of childish insults. And our reaction is to genuflect before him by wheeling out the monarch to flatter him. It's going to look a bit desperate and pathetic, isn't it?
Well, you know, I don't think Charles will look desperate and pathetic. I think you could label that the decision of the British government to send the royal family over here. I mean, the royal family don't get too much say in it. They are requested to be here, and they'll perform the duties as best as they can. And I do actually think that this so-called soft diplomacy that we hear trumpeted out every now and then when the royals are involved, that is an important part of this visit, because Trump is a law unto himself. I mean, the comments that have been coming thick and fast, not only against Britain, but against NATO allies, are pretty disgraceful. And yet, it does seem that people are trying to placate the President of the United States because of their standing in the world. And I don't think that makes us any better or any less worse off than other people that are still trying to forge relationships.
Yeah, and now Trump says he's going to review our claim to the Falkland Islands. Aside from the rights and wrongs to our claim on those islands, what's it got to do with him?
Well, a good question, and certainly it's got nothing to do with him. I mean, that it is up for discussion about the disputed sovereignty of the Falkland Islands, and I'm sure that lots of people have different opinions on it, but you wouldn't expect Donald Trump to be wading to the argument. It seems it's just another stick to beat us with, doesn't it? I mean, the comments that he's been coming out against the Prime Minister have been pretty desperate, leading to Keir Starmer to being in a pretty desperate situation and not wanting to go on the offensive, but calling him weak, as you said, to comments about our Navy capabilities, it's all pretty childish. And I think that the comments about the Falkland Islands pretty much fall into that category as well.
Yeah, and do you think that the King is going, despite the fact that Trump seems to think that he should be making our foreign policy decisions and that he should be writing our tax laws? I mean, he demands that we join in his Iran excursion, as he describes it. He demands that we open the Strait of Hormuz that he closed, and he threatens us on the tax that we are going to levy on tax avoiding American tech companies. And yet we're sending a monarch. Does it make it appear as though that we are okay with all that?
Well, I certainly see the argument, of course, and you could have just reeled off a number of things that Donald Trump has an opinion on. He seems to have an opinion on absolutely everything and anything, doesn't he? Whether it's drilling in the North Sea, our energy capabilities, or the perceived energy crisis. The amount that Britain is paying in tariffs seems to change every time he gets out of bed. I mean, these are issues for Trump, and people seem to have to try and keep up with it. But yes, of course, it does seem that we are trying to smooth over a pretty toxic relationship by sending the royal family over. However, the royal family are very used to this. You look at any moment in the late Queen's reign where she had to dine with despots and dictators, whether that was at Buckingham Palace or going on other foreign tours. You know, this isn't alien to the royal family, and it certainly comes under the jurisdiction of their duty. So, for other people sort of moaning about what they do for their existence, I mean, this is a particularly important part of the duty.
Yes, chit-chatting with some of the world's worst people is part of the job, isn't it?
Well, you and I are both journalists, so, we've probably got experience in that somewhere down the line. But certainly the royal family have got experience in spades of that. And it is part of the job. And, they do have to smooth over relations. As I said, that the phrase, the soft diplomacy is often used because it is an important part of diplomatic and political relations. And I do think, I've seen it with my own eyes when Trump has been in the UK for those two state visits. I mean, he is on his best behaviour. And then, we have benefited in part with reduced tariffs. But of course, as I said, his attitude is changes like the wind, unfortunately. So we just have to try and keep up as best as we can.
Well, I suppose that's one way of putting it, that we have benefited by reduced tariffs. But the tariffs used to be zero. I mean, he has declared, essentially, an economic war with us for no reason at all, tariffing our goods that go into America by between 10 and 25%, directly damaging our country. I mean, is there much difference between us sending the King and Queen to America under those circumstances as if we were sending them to Russia?
Well, again, it's a valid point, and I think that unfortunately, America is our closest ally. So, for all the rhetoric that's been coming out of the White House and from Donald Trump, and we do still have to maintain that relationship. Unfortunately, we are dealing with a president who is very, very volatile, and we've certainly seen that over the last few months. Again, it comes back to the fact that the King and Queen have been asked to do this for the British government. It is no surprise to them that they would be asked to do that. And I think when we're going to see the King speaking at the White House, I mean, he is no fool. He is going to be obviously speaking about the connection and relationship between our two nations. But I fully expect Charles to speak about the difficulties in maintaining a relationship when there are such huge impactful events being waged by America, and certainly try to tone down the language that's being used to injure us by.
Where do you think he's going to make not direct political points, but by inference he's going to perhaps give Trump a ticking off, or will he metaphorically stick to the weather?
Well, I think when we saw Trump in at Windsor, I mean, I know that the King did raise the ongoing war in Ukraine. There was an appeal on behalf of the country, and indeed President Zelensky, who he'd met just a few days before Trump arrived, in order to try and smooth over relations on behalf of the Ukrainians as well. So, the King is regarded as a global statesman. And Trump has certainly said that he respects the office, he respects the man. He's called Charles a great friend and said that he hugely respects him. And I do actually genuinely believe that. I mean, Trump's mother was from the UK, and he does have a huge affection for the country. And so Charles is probably in a much better position to try and placate the administration than any of our politicians are right now.
Just as an aside, do you think that the government has inadvertently done Nigel Farage a favour? Because this close to the May elections, the King is going to be going to gladhand a man whose chief cheerleader in this country is Nigel Farage.
Listen, you can argue it on both sides, can't you? You could say that, and what a disgrace, and I'm sure, politicians and campaigners have said this, what a disgrace it is that the King and Queen are going to break bread with a man who doesn't think twice about insulting our country and our troops, and certainly lambast us for not getting involved in a controversial, if arguably illegal, war. But you could also say, as I have stated the case, of that this is a direct opportunity for the government to send our best team over there, and certainly he's not listening to any of the politicians at the moment. Whether that plays into Nigel Farage's hands, is up for debate. Is Nigel Farage still in there as much as he was with Trump a few years ago? I'm not so sure. I think Trump sort of moves on to other things very, very quickly. And we've got the May elections coming up, and that will be quite a distinct point in this government's tenure.
And what do you make of Ed Davey calling for the whole trip to be cancelled? I mean, at this point, would it be more of a diplomatic scene to cancel it rather than to go ahead and risk more insults and threats?
Well, we've certainly seen calls for the visit to be cancelled across the board in relation to Trump's comments, and of course there will have been a chorus of support to cancel it in light of the shooting last night. I mean, it is a very, very controversial visit for several reasons. I think it wouldn't be the right idea. I think that this is part of the royal family's job. It's very, very much a diplomatic mission that the King and Queen have been sent on. But we will, of course, see some other events. They are travelling to New York to attend the commemorations at the 9/11 memorial. We've got the 25th anniversary coming up. And again, that very, very much plays into the respect that the royal family want to convey on this trip.
And just finally, on the matter of security, I mean, there was that shooting incident at the event yesterday. The King and Queen are going to be surrounded by professional security personnel, aren't they, in addition to the ones that the Americans will throw at them?
Well, there will be, but certainly, you know, the conversations I've been having today with members of the King's team at Buckingham Palace have been extended dramatically throughout the day. There were emergency meetings between Buckingham Palace and the White House all day today after that dramatic incident at the Washington Hotel. Of course, there will be some minor alterations, I understand, of some of the engagements. But this place is pretty heavily armed at any moment. I mean, I've been in Washington for a couple of days now. I've been here many times in the past, and I've never seen security like it. And I think that is shows you an awful lot about you know, Donald Trump and the controversy that he courts at all quarters, because he's certainly a president like no other.
That was Russell Myers, the royal editor of the Daily Mirror. So what do you think? Is it actually a waste of... At best, is it a complete waste of time? At worst, is this country sending its chief ambassador, the most senior office, the symbol of the nation, to hose down with flattery a man who is actively attacking us commercially and insulting us constantly? 0345 6060 973... LBC.
This is LBC. You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I suppose the King and the Queen are stuck with it because, you know, once the plans are arranged, then it's very difficult to get out of them without creating some sort of diplomatic incident. But it's not a very good look, really, is it, for this country, which has been under constant verbal attack from Donald Trump, to be sending the most senior of us to essentially hose the man down with flattery while he's insulting us. Seems a bit desperate, doesn't it? 0345 6060 973. And do you think that as he's going, and he's going to be delivering a speech to Congress of both houses, which is a unique event, do you think that the King should make some barbed political points, or should he actually just stick to the weather? Cheadle, hello, Elliot.
Oh, hi, Nick. Well, yes, I think the King and Queen should be visiting the USA because it is a reciprocal diplomatic state visit, and it celebrates their 250-year independence. The King is actually our best politician we have in dealing with the likes of Trump. Charles's infectious personality disarms people with inflated egos such as Trump. Trump is in awe of the King. That's a fact. And that's our great advantage in repairing wounds over Iran and strengthening our special relationship. Because, of course, it continues well after Trump's premiership, presidency, I should say,
yes,
with the USA, and develops our economic mutual benefit. And the King is born and bred for this task, let's face it.
Our economic mutual benefit. How did that work out for us when Trump came here and we rolled out the red carpet?
Well, I don't know.
Terribly badly. He essentially started a trade war with us.
Well, he started a trade war with everyone. We got off lightly. I don't know why we did.
That's irrelevant. If somebody walks into a bar and punches everybody in the face twice and only you once, you wouldn't feel positively about that.
Yes, but remember, this is a little bit more than just a battle in a pub, really. It transcends that. This is a relationship which we've had for so many years that will transcend Trump's presidency.
Really, believe in the special relationship?
I think we have to have a special relationship with the USA.
Do you think that America thinks that we have a special relationship, or is it our desperate yearning for hang on to the coattails of the big bully in the playground?
Only within the Oval Office do you find dissension about this special relationship.
Well, the only office that counts.
Oh, at the moment. But remember, the king and queen just don't go for one particular journey. They go on a mission to keep that relationship going. And that's the main thrust of why they're going there. If they thought that Trump was the only reason why they were going, I don't suspect they would go. I think the prime minister would say, don't bother. But I think this is more important than just Trump. And you must agree with that, because we have a long-term relationship with America.
Well, I think it's more important than Trump, but I think that Trumpism will outlast Trump. I think that this is the new normal with America. This, nothing that's happening is by accident. It's the plan.
Yeah, you see that. You're rather cynical, let's face it. You don't believe that there is any special relationship currently.
Well, I don't believe that America does. I think this is a figment of our own imagination. I think it's a bit rather desperate. It's us yearning to be the power that we used to be, knowing in our hearts that we can't be that anymore. So let's ally ourselves to the big guy.
Maybe you're right. Maybe we don't think we can ally ourselves to anyone else. Maybe we feel that the USA is the only friend that we've got.
Well, that's nonsense.
Well, why is it nonsense?
How America is the only friend we've got? There's a giant continent that's near enough that you could see it from here.
Yeah, but remember, we disentangled ourselves from the European Commission.
Yes, but that wasn't because of Europe. That was because of certain individuals who thought that by offering us a tower of lies that they would guy the gullible into making a decision that was against their own interests.
But there you go again. You think the public are something like completely narrow-minded, don't understand what's going on around them. They decided that we were coming out of Europe, and that's the way it will be.
Yeah, but they decided based on misinformation. And there's no amount of repetitions of the phrase, I knew what I was voting for, that is going to change that fact. They didn't know what they were voting for because they were sure that the lies that they were promised would actually come about, and they have not. Anyway, I don't want to get down that rabbit hole with you, Elliot, but appreciate the call. Tavistock, hello, Rose.
Oh, hi, Nick. Well, I'm with you on this, basically. On the one hand, the king could be excellent at subtly suggesting that Trump improve his own behaviour towards us. and at the same time, Trump's ludicrous and appalling disrespect for any boundaries in life whatsoever of decency, honour or sovereignty. We could see ourselves ignoring as too absurd for words, even including the disgusting comments on our forces. On the other hand, are we simply colluding with his abuse of us by letting the royals go and by not really reacting to any of what he says, except to some extent we did with the disgusting forces comments? And are we going to continue this collusion in our own abuse by lying down and saying yes as he puts his candidate into power in our country? And we simply don't highlight this business, of which is out there in print, isn't it, in this security document.
Yes, the plan is...
Sorry, I've lost my...
The Project 2025 states that it is America's goal to remove governments in Europe and replace them with far-right governments. That's what it says.
And we say, oh, yes, Mr. Farage, because Mr. Trump says you must be in power. We are going to, you know, it'll just happen.
I think
Nick,
yes.
We will be a U.S. occupied.
Right, okay, all right. Because the elections are coming up quite soon, I don't really want to.
Oh God, sorry about that.
Get into that too much, but I think it does. It doesn't really reflect on us very well that in the face of all this abuse, we are essentially saying, thank you, sir, may I have another?
I have another, yes, because if you look at it, he is and has been for quite a while at a sort of quasi-war with us, hasn't he?
Yes.
Don't you feel in some
many
ways?
Well, it is a war. It's an economic war. He's actively damaging this country for no good reason with this insane tariffs regime.
Yes.
All right, thanks a lot, Rose. appreciate that. Bob says, regarding the King State visit, the government could simply invoke or advise the notion of a risk of impartiality being politically compromised. Wow, what does that mean? Regarding the King State visit, the government could simply invoke or advise the notion of a risk of impartiality being politically compromised. Well, there's a lot of syllables there, Bob. I've got absolutely no idea what they mean put in that order. Penge. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing? You okay?
Yes, good, thanks.
Can I ask you then, do you think that King Charles should go?
Yes, because now, if they cancel, it would be more of a scene than if he just goes and hopes for the best.
Exactly. And I think that King Charles will stand his ground. He's quite good in that situation, isn't he? Yeah, but he's got his sense of humour. He's got a really funny
sense of humour. But he won't stand his ground in any way that we are talking about here. He'll hose him down with flattery, make a few comments about, let's have peace and, war is stupid and stuff like that. But no, he's not going to go on the offensive. Not to his face, but the moment the King gets on that plane and waves him a happy goodbye, Trump's smile will drop and he'll go back to insulting us. We know that that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happened last time, isn't it?
All right, thanks, Peter. Fit one more in for the news. Bristol, hello, Neil.
I think what happened yesterday in the White House is actually given us a perfect opportunity to cancel the visit. Their security is obviously completely screwed, isn't it? And we can just sort of say, right, we can't trust your security guards. You can't even manage, to keep the White House free from people shooting.
Well, it wasn't the White House, it was a hotel.
Well,
but they should have secured it more efficiently than they did, no doubt about that.
And there's going to be a lot more coming out from that in the next few days, I reckon. Will probably be covered up.
But, I suppose it would be a slender excuse, and because the King is 77 years old. I mean, there are certain things that are perhaps too onerous a task for somebody of those years. So it would probably, they'd be miffed, but they would understand. But I think at this point, it would be too much of a diplomatic incident to cancel now.
It's the other way around. Trump will be saying, oh my God, I'm not going to London.
Quite possibly.
Overrun by Muslims and,
No doubt he would say exactly that or something akin to it. Yeah. But copying Trump's behaviour would also not reflect very well on us. So I think the King's stuck with it. Thanks for that, Neil. Coming up, we are going to check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there. We'll also be talking about artificial intelligence. The UK wants to become an AI superpower, but the government seems unsure on how to achieve this. I'm going to speak to our tech guru to get the bottom of it. After this news update with Tim Daly.
The King and Queen are due to depart for the US later on for a 4-day state visit. There had been fears it would be postponed following the gun attack in Washington during an event President Trump was attending. The Liberal Democrats are calling on the Prime Minister to ensure the King addresses the issue of the Falkland Islands during the trip. There have been reports Washington is considering a review of the UK's claim to the islands. And half a dozen people are due before magistrates later following reports a van was driven into the gate of a drone factory.
factory in Leicestershire. They've been charged with causing criminal damage and burglary and were detained over events at the site in Braunston. LBC weather, patchy rain for Scotland overnight, but mostly dry for the rest of the country. It'll feel particularly chilly in the countryside with a typical low of around 4 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
One vision of the UK's future involves a decarbonised economy powered by clean, renewable energy. Another involves making the UK an artificial intelligence superpower. The two may not be compatible. Let's talk about this with Will Guyatt. Will is the LBC tech correspondent. He joins us on the line now. Hello, Will.
Hello, Nick.
So there's two departments of government, and they both came up with a figure of how much energy it would take for us to become what they're calling an AI superpower, and they're 10 times out.
Yeah.
How on earth did that happen?
Well, nobody knows how much power is going to be required. That's the simplest way for me to start. If we'd done this a year ago, you'd need 10 times more power than you would now. Google are making some real advances in this stuff. The reality is, though, that an awful lot of energy gets used, and we're really not quite sure how much demand the UK is going to have. Just for one place to start you with, those 8-second annoying AI slop videos, you know, like Nick Ferrari being chased by a bear on a moped or something like that, the 8-second video,
yeah,
that uses enough energy to power a microwave for an hour just to generate a single video.
What?
And so this is why we're in, and that's also the reason why OpenAI recently closed their video platform, because they were burning through huge amounts of available, you know, systems and processors, etc., to generate this stuff on creating a load of old rubbish. It uses a huge amount of energy at the moment, but like I said, a good improvement from Google that's been developed in the last 6 months or so, and Google aren't prone to mass exaggeration like some of the AI companies are, has made this a far more efficient process. But like I said, even asking one simple question, like me saying, who's on LBC Friday to Sunday nights at this time, that would use the equivalent of about 5 seconds of time of a microwave. So this stuff uses a huge amount of energy, and it kind of depends what direction the UK goes in, whether we decide we're going to do a lot of this on home soil and home territory, or are we going to do the classic UK thing and start offshoring it? Because the reality is, electricity is cheaper in other countries. You could actually have UK data centres somewhere which are going to be cheaper to run.
Yes. So why does it take so much energy then? Where's this energy going?
Well, it's because you're using really high-powered computers to do all of this stuff. This is the ridiculous thing. Because it can generate a video and do it in 8 seconds, it's essentially the equivalent of you or I deciding we're going to make a 3-hour film at our desk. And to do it in the speed that you want it, you know, an 8-second video generated within 20, 25 seconds, it needs a huge amount of computational power. And computational power needs a huge amount of energy. And that's why this whole thing is sort of this sort of weird cycle that's everybody's sort of hoping that the amount of power that's needed to do this stuff reduces, but nobody really knows, because nobody could in any way, shape or form know how much compute power, which is essentially, I'm going to simplify it by saying the number of computers in a big shed that you're going to need in 10 years' time, because nobody knows whether or not this is something that we're all going to be doing billions of times a day and all the technology is going to use it, or it's going to fade out. That's the challenge.
It's also the power required to keep these things cool, isn't it? The enormous air conditioning units that need to stop essentially these AI data centers from bursting into flames.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. Because generating that Nick Ferrari on a moped being chased by a bear uses an awful lot of electricity, but that also generates heat from the system, and you need the cooling. So you've got the double bubble of the energy required to actually make the image, and then you've, like you said, you've got the energy required to keep the place cool so it doesn't go up in flames. Or slightly more realistically, this kit lasts 18 months, not six, because it's got so hot it's damaged.
The other thing, it gets even worse than that, is that it requires a massive amount of water as well.
Oh, yeah, the numbers on water are ridiculous. I think somebody suggested for cooling in certain server farms that are used, which use water for cooling, just asking ChatGPT the simple, you know, the simple question, who's on LBC after Nick Abbott, you would be using something like a bottle of water to do that, like a half, you know, this sort of typical bottle you go and buy in a garage. But the fact that you're not the only person asking a question simultaneously on that platform should give you the indication of just how much water is used in these situations. I think there's an awful lot of hope attached to this, Nick, in that the hope for many people is that we don't need to worry too much about huge amounts of energy being used, because in 10 years' time, somebody will have created a new and super efficient method of making this work. And that's the issue, that if they really believe that, I don't know why people like Google and Meta and others are actually seriously looking at creating their own blooming nuclear reactors to do this sort of stuff. And that's where we find ourselves. And Microsoft, depending on whether or not everybody believes in the green economy and all that sort of stuff, Microsoft had managed to reduce its energy use and CO2 output over the last 30 years. It had reduced incrementally every year. And until 2 years ago, Microsoft's energy usage globally went up 95%.
Wow.
And that was because they just said, right, screw this, we're getting into the world of AI and we need these big data centers to do all of these things we want them to do.
And so, pressing ahead with this and crossing our fingers and hoping that somebody is going to come up with some magic solution to the problems that we are creating at some point in the future is a bit like driving slowly over an unfinished bridge in the hope that the workers will be able to complete it by the time we reach the gap. Except that we're not driving slowly, are we?
Yeah, or like saying, I don't need to worry about, you know, I'm going to eat loads of burgers for the next 10 years because there'll be medical cures to stop me dying from heart disease by that point. It is as simple as that. And we sort of find ourselves in this sort of situation with technology where people do automatically assume that there's going to be a way of solving this. And by the way, if they do go down the route of making this super efficient, it causes a huge crash in the global economy, because everybody's got really super excited about artificial intelligence costing bajillions of pounds to build the hardware and build the kind of the infrastructure. This is why the sort of start of the year, or it's moving so quickly now, it might have even been last year, I get confused on the dates slightly. There was a Chinese AI model called DeepSeek that was announced.
Yeah.
And the long story short of the difference between that and the Western models of AI, the Western models of AI are the Ferrari on all the powerful equipment, and the Chinese model was tuned to a lawnmower engine. And there's an important analogy there, because you could do a lot more. You could actually do this really well with a far cheaper and far less power using lawnmower. You wouldn't have to spend the billions of dollars in infrastructure investment to do what the Chinese were attempting to do. Now, the Chinese numbers on this occasion were shaky and couldn't be proven. But if that had been proven at that point, the whole model of Western AI hope and optimism and overpricing in the market would have collapsed overnight.
Yes, it is hope and optimism, isn't it? Because at the moment, companies, and it's just about five companies who are vying to rule the world, they're spending ungodly amounts of money, absolutely massive amounts. In fact, they're firing people in order to spend the money that they would have given them as salaries on this AI project, and no one's made any money from it yet.
I know you enjoy all of this stuff. There's a company called Allbirds. Allbirds made dull but successful on Instagram shoes. They decided 2 weeks ago they were going to sell the shoe company because they weren't making enough money from it. So they made £3 million selling the shoe company. Overnight, a shoe company with no experience in AI said it was pivoting into AI infrastructure. How much do you think their share value went up in one single session in the US?
I'm going to say 15,000%.
Not bad, 584.
Right.
And they have no, they've got nothing to do with the world of artificial intelligence. Like, this wasn't a company that could say, we've had loads of experience doing this in our own world. They've just said, now we're going to slap AI into our name and our business function. And that's what's the biggest problem with artificial intelligence. There is some really good stuff that happens with it. My missus has had breast cancer. The detection of rare breast cancers with certain AI tools is increasing massively. But then you've got the other end of it, which is this sort of investor-led, bombastic, hype-driven reality where nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Well, some people predict that something is going to happen. The father of AI, whose name escapes me, you're probably familiar with his work.
He's escaped me at this time of the day as well, but I know who you mean.
He said that there is a 20% chance that artificial intelligence will kill all human life. If there was a plane going to your holiday destination and you had only it had a 20% chance of crashing, you would not get on that plane.
No, you wouldn't. And kicking off tomorrow Monday morning in the US courts, there's a battle going on between Elon Musk and Sam Altman over whether or not Altman can stay at the top of OpenAI. And it's the best way to describe it is if you actually read into it, they were best mates who fell out, and it's like Pat Butcher and Peggy Mitchell. It's like there isn't a lot of sense to it, but at the center of it is it's a $147 billion lawsuit, and apparently OpenAI is now valued at $850 billion. It's a company that's not made a profit in its life. It's just cancelled a $1 billion deal with Disney because it wasn't going to be able to do what they'd initially promised. They've forced up single-handedly the global price of computer components by 50 to 60% in the last year on the basis of promising to buy all of the available memory, and then decided in one fell swoop they couldn't actually afford to meet what they suggested. If I'd done that, Nick, I would have been closed down. I wouldn't be worth $850 billion US dollars.
Yes, and where we're going with this, even in the best possible circumstance, we can see what's happening at the moment, because the companies that are making this, and companies that also have large numbers of people who stare at screens for a living, they're firing those people that stare at screens. In fact, they're firing the people that are making the AI, because the AI that they've made can now do their jobs, right?
There's an element of truth to that, and this is where it's all even messier. The reason why Meta is laying off tons of people at the moment is because it doesn't want to spend money on data scientists. It wants to spend money on AI compute power. So that's more computers, more big data sheds, in the reality that they might make some potential money from it. It does feel a bit like Turkey's voting for Christmas, though. So Meta staff have all been told in the last week all of their keystrokes and activity are going to be monitored by the company. And you think, God, that's creepy. And then you discover it's actually being used to train the artificial intelligence models that will arguably replace some of its finest engineers. So we're in a weird situation where this is now happening. Whether or not these jobs are being lost because of actual AI efficiencies or because the company's now talking to investors and saying, oh, it's really working, guys, look at this, is going to push up the price, has yet to be proven. But Microsoft's doing it, Google's doing it, Square, the company that's a payments company owned by the founder of X, Jack Dorsey, is doing it. All sorts of other people are now saying, look, AI efficiencies are here and they're real. And we have a government currently saying, yeah, guys, it's just going to be supporting you in your job, which is at odds to reality.
Yes. On that, checking your keyboard strokes, imagine Mark Zuckerberg being part of something creepy, the man whose career started by creating a hot or not ratings website of his fellow students at university.
Well, a decade ago when I worked for him, he used to have the camera on his laptop covered up with a piece of tape.
Yeah.
So, let's make an assessment of that at a later date, perhaps.
They're also talking about, Elon Musk has mentioned that the future of AI, it will make work voluntary, essentially. You can work if you like, and if not, then artificial intelligence will take care of you. But it seems that, from the position of somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about on this subject, me, that what is actually happening is that we're going to have mass layoffs of all of the people who thought that they had done the right thing with their lives. They went to school and they worked hard and they went to university and they got degrees and they became lawyers and accountants and things like that, traders in the city. All of those people who aren't expecting it are about to get fired, and then what will they do?
Well, that is an issue, but I would also add to that Musk is a confirmed, self-confessed ketamine user and keeps two vintage handguns by his bed. So I think that there's going to be a lot of disruption and noise and a lot of destruction. But there's been this concept over the last few weeks of this kind of the growth of something called work slop. And that's not a town in Nottingham, but it's the idea that AI is now churning out so much rubbish that companies are having to bring specialists back in to tidy up all the stuff that AI is generating. Now, that will improve over time, but part of me feels, Nick, like there will be a place for AI in the workplace, but I'm not 100% convinced it's going to replace the human being. Not because I'd quite like to work for another 20 years, but because I don't actually think that's going to be the reality. Life will be a weird place if ultimately, social media becomes AI being interacted with by AI because we're all on the beach. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm. Well, maybe the father of AI is right, and that 20% chance of human annihilation will actually come to pass, and AI will end the human race, but at least we'll have cute videos of Nick Ferrari being chased by a bear on a bike to look at as we die.
I'm making another one just now to make myself feel better.
Thanks very much, Will. Appreciate that. Will Guyatt, LBC's technological correspondent. Now we're going to take a short break, then off to America to talk to LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, James Max.
2. More than half of Brits think Keir Starmer should step down as Prime Minister. What would that achieve for Labour and the country? But first, what do you think could be achieved by the King and Queen's US state visit?
James Max at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
They say go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. When you're hungry for something big, like really big. Big Arch for big McDonald's hunger. Order on the McDonald's app.
Served from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 on charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
And this is Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Hello, Simon.
Evening, Nick.
So, quite the day. It was sort of ironic that Trump did not attend the White House correspondents' dinner before because of the reception he thought he'd get, and now this.
Yes, absolutely. Ironic indeed. He's now, of course, pressing for the dinner to take place, to be rescheduled, he says, within the next month, within the next 30 days. I have to tell you that the president has given an interview tonight to 60 Minutes, the flagship current affairs program on CBS, a network that is generally now increasingly friendly to him. But he has engaged in a very difficult exchange on 60 Minutes with Nora O'Donnell, the former anchor of the CBS Evening News. She has read to him a portion of the alleged gunman's 1,000-word manifesto that was sent, again, reportedly, by the suspect to members of his own family minutes before the attempt to breach security at the Hilton Hotel 24 hours ago. That was all taking place, of course, on the ground floor of the Hilton Hotel. That's where the security was set up. The president was enjoying his salad course along with 2,000 invited guests in the basement ballroom. The gunman, of course, was tackled on the first floor, never got close to the basement ballroom. But take a listen to this simply astonishing exchange between Nora O'Donnell of CBS News and President Donald Trump on 60 Minutes tonight.
The so-called manifesto is a stunning thing to read, Mr. President. He appears to reference a motive in it. He writes this, quote, administration officials, they are targets. And he also wrote this, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. What's your reaction
to
that?
Well, I was waiting for you to read that because I knew you would, because you're horrible people, horrible people. Yeah, he did write that. I'm not a rapist. I didn't rape anybody.
Do you think he was referring to you?
Excuse me. I'm not a pedophile. You read that crap from some sick person. I got associated with all stuff that has nothing to do with me. I was totally exonerated. Your friends on the other side of the plate are the ones that were involved with, let's say, Epstein or other things. But I said to myself, you know, I'll do this interview and they'll probably, I read the manifesto, you know, he's a sick person, but you should be ashamed of yourself reading that because I'm not any of those things.
Staggering exchange there on 60 Minutes tonight between Nora O'Donnell of CBS News and President Trump, in which he denies the claims made in the manifesto by this alleged suspect. The suspect doesn't name him in the manifesto. That's why you heard Nora O'Donnell there saying to him, oh, you think he's referring to you? And then the president denies that he is a rapist, has ever been a pedophile, insists once again that it was, as he puts it in that exchange, friends of Nora O'Donnell, by which he means the people in the Democratic Party, prominent Democrats, people on the left that were associated with Jeffrey Epstein, not him. And that exchange, I think, is going to be dominating headlines here tomorrow morning. It literally aired within the last few minutes on CBS.
On CNN, meanwhile, they had the Democrat Jamie Raskin in for an interview, and the host on CNN blamed Jamie Raskin for previously saying that Trump is bad for the country for this attack.
Utterly extraordinary, an utterly extraordinary question posed to Congressman Jamie Raskin, Democrat from Maryland, by Dana Bash of CNN, asking him, in essence, whether the Democrats are now going to cool it with their attacks on President Donald Trump, and intimating through the question that Democrats in some sense may have been responsible for this attempt to breach security at the Hilton Hotel last night. I mean, look, this entire weekend, and I don't take this view because Donald Trump is president. I have taken this view for over 20 years in this city. This White House Correspondents' Dinner every year is just the most appalling example of media organizations choosing to cozy up casually and establish friendly relationships with the people in power that they cover. And it's one of the reasons why I never attend any of these dinners. I stopped attending these dinners years ago because I just felt that this was an increasingly uncomfortable place to be. We should not, as reporters, be casually socializing with the newsmakers that we cover on a daily basis. But we've now got to a stage where the news media, pinned down as they were in the ballroom briefly last night, and let's be clear, it was brief because the gunman didn't get anywhere near the ballroom itself. He didn't even get down to the basement level of the hotel. Huge questions, as we've been talking about earlier in the day on LBC, about the nature of the security operation that was put into place at that hotel last night. There's going to be a big investigation into that. But now you have the news media that was present in the room for that dinner, and President Trump and his top officials kind of fused together by the traumatic experience that they went through last night. And the result of that was the extraordinary moment today on CNN where a Democrat member of Congress, who himself was at the dinner last night and went back into the room saying the show must go on, just as President Trump had been doing before, of course, they cancelled it on the advice of law enforcement, is basically challenged by CNN and asked whether he's going to continue vocally opposing the actions of the Trump administration, because in some sense, the anchorwoman was suggesting that perhaps the Democrats had fueled all of this, which just takes the relationship between the media and the politicians they cover to an entirely new low, which is another reason why no self-respecting reporter should be going to these events.
Yes, I mean, apart from anything else, it's the price of the ticket to sit there and eat, isn't it? I mean, they presumably are not paying for themselves in large numbers, I would imagine. They are being paid for by friendly corporations to the president.
Well, I think it's $300 a ticket now. And,
oh, I thought it was way more than that.
You know, and increasingly, of course, the reporters' ticket price is covered by the networks that they work for. But what's happened to this dinner, it's really important to understand this because it's been around since the 1920s. But this is not the event that it was when I first moved here over 30 years ago. There are a handful of members of the permanent Washington elite who about 20 years ago decided that the character and tenor of this dinner needed to change and that it needed to become the East Coast's answer to the Oscars. So it became this celebrity-studded, weekend-long affair that completely polluted what had been a fairly straightforward single-night event where the reporters got into the room with the president and they all roasted each other.
Yes.
And now it's this weekend of excess that begins with lunch parties on the Saturday, stretches out into after parties after the dinner, then the Sunday is filled with parties as well, networks falling over themselves to get celebrities and prominent figures from whichever administration is in power to sit at their respective tables, the same networks that are trimming their news budgets, firing reporters,
right,
cutting back their international news operations.
Yeah,
it's just an appalling event, and unfortunately last night one that came under attack.
Simon, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for that. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Now, if you missed any of today's show, then it is available on the Global Player app or the LBC app, both of which are free from your app store. I'll be back on Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, coming up at 4 on LBC. It's Ian Payne. But first, James Max.
Thanks, Nick. It is James Max here on LBC, in for Richard Spur. So at 3, we'll be talking about a health think tank that reported a sharp decline in Brits' healthy life expectancy, especially in comparison to countries like Japan, Spain, Norway. We'll be asking how you stay healthy. And you'll find out if you've been slicing bread incorrectly all these years. At 2, a new poll from Ipsos shared with LBC has revealed that more than half of Brits think Keir Starmer should step down as Prime Minister. We'll be asking whether we should be removing Keir Starmer from office and what that would do for the country. But first, after last night's White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting has rocked Washington, I want to know, What can you be? What could be achieved by the King and Queen's visit?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Buckingham Palace says the King and Queen are looking forward to their state visit to the US after confirmation it will still go ahead. There had been concerns it would soon be postponed following the shooting at an event being attended by President Trump. It's hoped the trip will soothe UK-US relations, which have been damaged by the war in Iran. But the Daily Mirror's Royal Editor Russell Myers has been telling LBC the royal couple have been given a difficult task.
This is a very, very controversial visit. I mean, we're now talking about security issues at the 11th hour for the King and Queen after the event at Washington Hilton. There's obviously been criticism that they won't meet Jeffrey Epstein survivors. And, of course, the criticism Trump keeps playing out up against the British government. So it's against them on all quarters.
The Prime Minister is due to outline new measures to combat shoplifting later on today. They'll include an end to the de facto immunity for thieves who take goods worth less than £200. Sir Keir Starmer is also expected to promise an extra 3,000 neighbourhood police officers. A former Conservative minister is urging peers in the Lords to back his plan to ban under-16s from social media. Lord Nash has been campaigning for the age limit and says politicians have a final chance to act. LBC's Jonathan Ray has more.
Peers have insisted on a change in the law on social media access three times as part of the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill. But during the so-called ping-pong process, where new legislation is passed back and forth between both Houses of Parliament, MPs most recently rejected the proposals on Wednesday. The bill's now due back in the Lords, so a government amendment can be considered. Lord Nash is urging his colleagues to reject it.
Two more people have been charged over disorder at a football match between Rangers and Celtic in Glasgow last month. Fans invaded the pitch during the Scottish Cup tie at Ibrox. Ceremonies have been taking place in Ukraine to mark the 40th